Did, ooh, he's dead.
And I'm sure the DC and the minister will attest to that when they are much older in a few years' time, which is 2030. But before we start, let us welcome the minister and his team, and welcome the deputy minister, welcome the director general, Mr. Makubela, and welcome his team, and welcome the CEO of South African Tourism. And what we are going to do is we are going to have the teams introduced. From our side, we are having the Legal Services of Parliament, we are having the Secretary of the Committee. But I think because we are having a workshop, it will be important to know who is whom amongst the team and who has come with what. The legal offices, the legal representative of the department, and then perhaps the members as well. It may take a few minutes, 10 minutes or so, but I think it is important. So, without much ado, let me first allow the minister to introduce his team, then thereafter the DG to introduce his team, and then Mr. Zuma to introduce his team, and then the legal advisor officer. We've got to know how our and we expect them to be dressed in black, because we want them to be serious and pass every constitutional court case. So over to you, Minister.
Jefferson, thank you. My team is very easy.
First one is the Chief Operating Officer, Tim Scholes. The
second one is the Chief Financial Officer, Johan van der Waals. We have the new Chief Marketing Officer, Janine Hartung, attending for the first time and was lucky that she was following us. She would have been lost in the building. And we have Amanda Kotze-Sako, the Executive Manager responsible for the National Convention Bureau. And we have Belum Salo, responsible for the Office of the DO. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much. Honorable members, it's your turn now. And thereafter, quickly we shall have to move. Mama Ubatifa Baumstadt.
Paul Mugwanya, Batifa is the name, member of parliament, member of the tourism committee. Thank you. Member Mainale Soma, thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you, and thank you very much for the introduction. And once again, I'd like to express our support for the minister in sending best wishes to Mr. Farrow. And in fact, I talked to him in December, and it was just as if it is nothing serious. But quite often men just say, nothing serious and so forth. I expected to see him here, and it's only now when I asked Mr. Farrow how he is, where he is, and then he told me, no, he's still at home undergoing physiotherapy treatment. So I'm quite optimistic and positive. I've seen a lot of people undergoing physiotherapy treatment and becoming 100% well. I wish him to be that much. Please phone me, Mr. Shah. I shall phone him later when I get more time as well. On behalf of the committee, we value his contributions always. And we value also his contrary views, because it is his responsibility in the constitutional responsibility and responsibility in government. And we have always respected your views, whether we liked them or not, but the underlying fact was that we always respected them. So please convey those messages to Mr. Tefaro. But without much ado, let us allow the minister and the minister to say a few words, and then the minister has conveyed their apology, because they also have to go to another meeting. They are much more busy than members of parliament, because they have to meet much more stakeholders. Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you very much. The Director General will follow my brief presentation, and then he will hand over to our legal officer in the department to take you through the detail of the legislation. Chairperson, today our department will present Tourism Bill 2012. This presentation will give you an overview of the various chapters of the bill, the interpretation application. I will therefore not go into the complex details, but I would like to provide the committee with a context within which to understand not only the presentation, but also the prevailing conditions that existed in the wake of the drafting of the law. Chairperson, legislation in general is important for two essential reasons. Firstly, it replaces the spontaneous creation and application of non-legislative rules, thereby establishing order in a sector. And secondly, it is a prerequisite for society to develop and set rules that are enforceable and applicable for all, thereby creating an enabling environment for future development and growth. In light of this, it is essential to reflect on the current policy, legislative and strategic framework of our sector. Now, Chairperson, prior to the drafting of this bill, the sector was governed by the Tourism Act of 1993, with its objective to promote tourism. The Act was promulgated more than 15 years ago and was amended three times, in 1996, in 2000 and in 2002 respectively. All of the amendments related to the management of tourist guides. However, the Act fell short of being an overarching national legislative framework for the management of tourism, and it did not support the implementation of the later, in 1996, Tourism White Paper and its broader policy framework. It is inert and inflexible to respond to the ever-changing landscape of the sector, and colleagues have raised this issue with us over the last few years. The White Paper on the Development and Promotion of Tourism in our country was later drafted in 1996 with a specific purpose to provide a policy framework and guideline for the development of tourism, which the Tourism Act had actually omitted. The White Paper recognized that tourism is important to the economy, but that there was a lack of inclusive, effective national, provincial and local structures to manage tourism, to manage transformation and to ensure access. The White Paper further defined the role of key players such as national, provincial and local government, as well as the private sector, to which the Constitution of 1996 alluded. Very importantly too, the White Paper set the tone for later developments around responsible tourism practices. However, Chairperson, gaps became apparent in the White Paper as well. In 2009, government identified tourism as one of the key contributing sectors to the medium-term strategic priority of growing the economy and creating decent work. Tourism's capacity to deliver on the aforementioned was strengthened through the establishment of a dedicated department, our department, now the Department of Tourism. Furthermore, the new growth path and operational plan within the National Development Plan identified tourism as one of the six job drivers. The NDT is therefore guided by the National Tourism Sector Strategy, the NTSS, and we discussed that with the committee previously in detail, which was developed in consultation with our tourism stakeholders. Recognizing that transformation is vital to ensure the sustainable growth and development of our sector, and that inadequate, uncoordinated and fragmented tourism planning and information provision is the most pervasive challenge facing our department and growth of tourism in the country, the department embarked on the drafting of the tourism bill. The bill, when promulgated, will then Chairperson repeal the Tourism Act of 1993. The bill's overarching aim is to provide for the development and promotion of sustainable tourism for the social, economic and environmental benefit of all our citizens. And with that in mind, the bill notes five key objectives: promoting the practice of responsible tourism, providing for the effective marketing of our country, both domestically and internationally, promoting quality tourism products and services, promoting growth and development of the sector, and fifthly, effective intergovernmental relations in developing and managing tourism. Chairperson, the glaring gaps that the tourism bill seeks to address are inter alia as follows. Firstly, the NDSS, the National Sector Strategy, which was approved by Cabinet in 2011, will, when the bill is passed as an act, form part of the legislative framework for the management and development of tourism, the first time ever. The NDSS is premised on tourism growth, enhanced visitor experience, sustainability, and good governance. The policy framework that was initially set out in the white paper is also incorporated into the NDSS. Secondly, the bill makes provision for the establishment of conventions bureau by South African Tourism to coordinate this for business events. Necessary steps have already been taken to fund and implement the provisions defined in the bill for the creation of the conventions bureau. Thirdly, the bill establishes the Tourism Grading Council as a statutory entity responsible for quality assurance on our tourism products, services and facilities. Colleagues may recall that looking back at when the Grading Council was first established, it was quite messy, shall I say unprecedented procedure that was followed many, many years ago, and this will now put it on a firm legal footing. And the Grading Council chairperson will therefore implement the grading system. The bill expands its mandate and will allow the minister to determine the grading system and assign the oversight role and functions of the Grading Council to the department, to the Board of South African Tourism, or to any other suitable body in compliance with the Public Finance Management Act. Fourthly, the White Paper and the NTSS recognize the lack of knowledge and understanding in the tourism sector. In the bill, we are therefore providing for knowledge and information management, monitoring and evaluation. The bill also makes provision for the calling of information from tourism businesses. This is aimed at fostering better understanding of the sector and at improving decision making. The bill defines this as voluntary, and Jefferson, I'm quite sure this will be a discussion, and allows for incentives for businesses who participate. Fifthly, the bill also makes provision for the issuing of norms and standards to standardize the management and development of tourism, including the provision of tourism services, facilities, and products. The norms and standards on service excellence and responsible tourism control stem from the white paper, but also from the NTSS. The bill further provides for the determination of codes of good practice and guidelines for the management of tourism. And sixthly, finally, for the first time in tourism legislation, provision is made for tourism protection. This is a mechanism for the management of complaints and also encourages self-regulation within the industry. Point I would like to stress the emphasis on self-regulation. The tourism protector is a conduit for the referral of tourist complaints to relevant authorities and accredited private sector schemes for resolution. Now, Chairperson, due to the ambiguous nature of the word protector, we would like to hear your views on whether the use of the term tourism protector would create an unrealistic expectation of the scope of its power and functions, and we also have alternatives that we would like to discuss with the committee there. Our concern is, this is a product of the consultation process that we had with all the stakeholders, but I must admit, re-looking at this issue again, we are so open, obviously, for discussion on this issue. The word protector actually raise expectations too high of what may be achievable here by our own department. And in the briefing, we will outline to you the overlap with other institutions and other legislations, especially consumer legislation, that was already passed by Parliament. In conclusion, Chairperson, this bill serves as the essence of the effective legislative framework required for the drafting of policies and strategies that will enhance the performance of the tourism sector for decades to come. Our vision for the department is to be a catalyst for tourism growth and development in our country, and the introduction of this bill will be added to our statistic of achievements in fulfilling this vision. Chairperson, thank you for allowing the Deputy Minister and myself to excuse ourselves after the presentation by the Director General. After that, you will be taken through the detail of the legislation, but we are available at any time to return and answer any questions or to enter into discussion if so required. And I now hand over to the Director General. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, honorable members. And let me say, we do appreciate your team spirit in the management of the events of the department and the minister. Over to you, Mr. Makovela, the DG.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Minister. My presentation, Chairperson, would cover the following topic. The Minister for Registered with the People of the Bill will basically take honourable members' confidence about the review process that we undertook during the drafting of the bill, the consultations that we undertook. We'll reflect on some key areas during the discussion leading to the draft bill as we have it, and also take into confidence about the implementation process and some mechanisms that are already in place in this regard. Sorry, I'm pressing the wrong button. The Minister already dealt at the strategic level with the purpose of the bill, but he also, amongst others, really come in an agri-legal framework for the development and the management of tourism. It would clarify open responsibilities. You know, the tourism is a concurrent responsibility. It will also ensure that we utilize our resources in a cost-effective manner. The process to review the bill, the 1993 bill started in earnest in 2009 after the creation of the standalone department. Consultation on the need to review the bill was taken to MINTEC, which is a forum where at the national and the provincial level we interact to them, at the technical level and also at MINMEC at the political level. The bill has been through to those processes. Once we've done that, the cabinet approved the bill, the draft bill, on the 26th of July last year for publication. The draft bill was then published in the Gazette number as reflected here in 2011 for comment. We received more than 450 comments. The draft bill was then presented and negotiated at NEDLAC, the joint product of negotiation. Then finally, our cabinet approved the bill for introduction to Parliament on 31st of May, 2011, not 2012. The chief technical advisor certified the bill also in 2012. The tourism bill was then introduced your process on the 4th of December last year. The discussion around the bill and centered amongst others whether some of the elements contained in the bill should be voluntary or mandatory. And this relates more specifically to the registration of tourism products. There was a view during the consultation that it had to be mandatory. And we realized that further to the consultation, it became apparent that the mandatory registration would not work for products that exist, because this product exists in terms of bylaws, and they've been registered in terms of the bylaws of the municipalities that are there. Now, to go to them and again require them to register through another process, it would be not prudent. I think the question of us understanding what is contained in the product, the tourism product, our chief legal advisor will deal with that later on. But then in this bill, you will see there's an element of norms and standards that we think is quite crucial, and that's a result of this consultation, that we needed to develop our own norms and standards. It's also later on, it will be addressed. The norms and standards will become a different one. We have developed some service level agreement, you'll see it later on. It enforces power and choice complaints. This is the public protector. The minister dealt with not the public protector. Yeah. That is the slippery what we're going to be in, as the minister indicated earlier. We're going to equate the tourism protector and the public protector. And ordinary people want to assume that the powers of the tourism protector is the same as the powers of the public protectors. I think the minister has dealt with this office. But now, the bill also deals with the issues related to transformation. The minister deals with the NTSS, which is a strategy that really enforces and implements the tourism strategy across the board, the private partnership arrangements that we have. therefore the coalition of Torres guides within certain limitations of cars and so on. Eventually we took what is contained in the legal framework because we felt that the prohibition of cars must also speak to the existing legal framework within the department, but without you manage that. And that led to a strong feeling that if you're going to limit the cars, for instance, the argument here was around if you drive a certain number of passengers, you have to have a tourist guide who will be explaining to them. So this thing has been turned through the discussion, and I think the conclusion here, part of that consultative process. In 2011, Cabinet also approved the NTSS, which has since become our strategic framework of engagement with the private sector, as I explained earlier on. The norms and standards that are responsible tourism, these are systems that we put in place in anticipation of the new rules that is coming up, that we need to develop our own standards, the service excellence. The service excellence standards have already taken to the Bureau of Standards. They are no longer our own standards. They are now an integral part of the country, the standards that are the Bureau of Standards. The knowledge and information management database, which is in place now, for every time to understand the products that we are having around the country. We've spoken about the Minister spoke about the Foundation Bureau within SAT. The grading system is also another new element that has come up with within the SAT. The grading system that we have in place is actually has looked at the best practices around the world. One of the critical things that we have in the grading system is around universal accessibility for people with disabilities to become an integral part as we are going through the grading. Now, we've tried to really standardize the budget with the local government because there's been a realization that from the local government, the provincial government level, there's no much attachment and funding of tourism-related activities. We started the process to that effect ourselves and the provincial structure to deal with how we fund this activity. Since it has been identified, as Minister indicated, one of our critical areas of job creation and contribution to into the fiscal. So this is the process that we think it will lead positive results. And we realize that also we're going to have a meeting on the local government on tourism sometime this month in Johannesburg. I know a lot of members have been invited to that. That is part of the discussion around how do we streamline both our intellectual and financial resources in developing the sector. Thank you very much, Minister. I join the Minister for permission to continue with the annexure C.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Minister and Director General. My presentation really focuses on the clause by both provisions of the class B. I would suggest that when we go through it, if we could have the draft request introduced in Parliament, that would really help us in terms of blowing the clause and clause process. The third chapter in the tourism bill provides for interpretation and objects. It's a chapter that seeks to define certain ways and expressions. It sets out the general objectives of the bill and determine how conflict with other laws are dealt with. I must say with regards to conflict, it's a standard clause that will mainly be in law to say because we've got various views of government and tourism being an area of concurrent legislative competence, how then do we deal with legislation that's existing currently if we notice some conflict. This draft bill sets out a procedure to be followed to clear out conflict. That is found in process number 1, 2, 3. Chapter 2 provides for the establishment of the National Tourism Sector Strategy, and it really says that there must be a process, a consultative process that the minister needs to follow in order for the minister to establish the NTSS. clause in chapter 2 also sets out what the subsidy must, the NCSS must provide for, and say it must at least provide for strategy, objectives, indicators, targets, plans, guidelines, procedures, and institutional arrangements relating to the promotion, development, and transformation of tourism. The minister alluded to the DG, sorry, transformation being an integral part of the literacy framework, and also that it was a key area for discussion. There were questions saying, where then do we reflect upon a transformation in the bill? And we have it as an object of the bill, we needed to reflect on it somewhere. And the NCSS was, in our view, perfect place where we should be able to say the strategy must inform targets, plans, procedures, and institutional arrangements that will also relate to development, to transformation within the tourism industry. This is where we are also providing for the gap that was identified in the white paper to say there's lack of understanding and information. And in chapter 2, we are providing for the minister's power to get information relating to tourism, and it is to create a database of information on tourism businesses. This is purely for the purpose of decision making, planning and decision making. Provision is made for the minister to determine norms and standards and indicators to measure compliance with norms and standards. Of note, we are providing for the minister to come up with norms and standards for practicing responsible tourism, for achieving service excellence, and for promoting the offset of the bill, and also for the provisioning of tourism information services to the public. The norms and standards and indicators must be determined after consultative process with the members of the Executive Council of Provinces and with the public. This is where there was an attempt initially to say perhaps MEC should also have the power to come up with norms and standards for their respective provinces. But they think that because they want to standardize the norms and standards, this is a national gas framework, they entrusted that power only with the minister. The bill also seeks to authorize the minister to issue terms of good practice within the tourism sector. This is mainly to guide conduct relating to tourism services, facilities, and borders. Chapter 3 deals with the South African Tourism Board. As we may be aware, it was established in the 1993 legislation, the current legislation. The bill seeks to provide for its continued existence, and we are providing for the functions of the tourism board. The functions are mainly to tighten up or to reaffirm the mandate of the board in terms of marketing South Africa's products and facilities internationally and domestically. A new thing that we have introduced into the powers of the function of the board is that they may now establish a national convention bureau to market the public as a business event destination. We are providing the governance of the board, and we're saying that it will consist of at least 9 and not more than 15 members who will be appointed by the minister. The charter deals with matters that are normally associated with the establishment of the statutory body, such as the term of office of members, their qualification, and vacating of offices. Provide for matters relating to meetings, their funding, accountability, and remuneration of members, among others. It's important to note that the running of the management of the SAT board is subject to the provisions of the Public Finance Management Act. There's provision made for the appointment of the Chief Executive Officer of the board. The person who is responsible for the efficient management of the business and affairs of the board. The board is entitled to determine employment and remuneration policy applicable to the personnel, and entrust the Chief Executive Officer with the power to appoint personnel. Chapter 4 deals with a grading system. You will notice that the current Act provides for a certification and grading criteria, but now we are introducing a system which is called the grading system. The chapter is to authorize the minister to develop the national grading system for tourism. The system must promote excellence in provision of tourism services, facilities and products. This is why the white paper has at that time identified that the poor, within the industry. And the training system is meant to close that gap in terms of making sure that we are promoting service excellence within the industry. The grant system must make provision for schemes of which sort of businesses can obtain membership and for the use and display of insignia. This is what in the current legislation we are taking over into the tourism field. That pertains to the stars, the grading, one star, two star, all of that. It will still continue in terms of the current of the proposed legislation. The Grading Council is currently engaged with the Construction Tourism Board. What this bill proposes is that it's going to be established as a Tourism Grading Council, which will now be a statutory body. And the main function of the Grading Council is to implement and manage the national grading system. The Minister will maintain oversight over the country. Before we move to that, we are also giving the minister power to decide if he wishes that the oversight in the functions of the grading system can be delegated or assigned to the department, to the board, the FAT, or to any other institution. In the case of the board, we are providing for the governance of the grading system in terms of clauses that will deal with the appointment of members, the numbers that can be appointed, the meetings, and all other things that are normally associated with the establishment of the statutory board. The bill also seeks to provide for the appointment of the chief quality assurance officer, who is responsible for supervising the process of grading and for the strategic management of the grading system. This is the pathway in which the organized to assign oversight of the council and of the performance of function of the council to the department, the board, or any other suitable body when the council is required. Tourism protection is the new function, the new dispensation that we are coming into the legal framework for tourism. The bill says that the minister can appoint and designate an official of the department as the tourism protector. It goes on to provide the functions of the tourism protector, which includes recommending to the minister the accreditation of a scheme arrangement established by of a particular tourism sector to resolve tourist complaints. This sector accreditation scheme will be monitored for effectiveness, and the tourism protector has the power to make certain recommendations to the minister regarding the effectiveness of the scheme. This chapter makes provision for the tourism protector to receive complaints in respect of tourism services, facilities or products, and to channel such complaints to appropriate functionaries. We recognize that there's ample legislation that deals with consumer protection, and the tourist being one of the being a consumer, there was clearly no need for the department to go and provide power to the foreign protection to submit a complaint. So we are simply saying this person should have the power to refer complaints to institutions or authorities that have already the power to resolve a complaint. The tourist guides have also made their way into the tourism bill, taking over from that is currently provided in the 1993 legislation. And the bill in particular, chapter 6, is to regulate the practices of the tourist guide profession. We are providing for the appointment of an official as the National Register of Tourist Guides. Currently, we do have one of the divisions appointed as the National Register. Functions of the National Register is really the person who is going to be responsible to maintain a central database of tourist guides, to prepare a code of conduct and ethics for tourist guides, and also will have sensitive power to hear and determine appeals lodged against decisions that have been taken by provincial registers of tourist guides. There's also the power to liaise with role players in the tourism sector with a view to facilitating growth in the sector and improving and maintaining standards in the tourist guiding sector. We have expanded on this one due to the nature of comments that we come from other organizations. They also have got a stake. The current legislation is limited to departments such as Home Affairs, but quite a number of departments came forward like transport today. We also have got a stake. We want to be involved then because of the register can consult with and just the organs of state, any organs of state that has got a stake in the management of tourist guide will be consulted as well. At provincial level, the NEC has got the power to appoint provincial registers of tourist guide. The provincial registers will be responsible for the management of tourist guides in their respective programs. Their functions include registration and maintenance of registers of tourist guides, to provide the national register with information. We can deal with complaints against tourist guides, can exercise disciplinary powers, and they have to disseminate information about registered tourist guides. Where a tourist guide is under suspension, that mystery is disseminated. Where a tourist guide has been that information needs to be provided. The procedure relating to the registration of tourist guides is elaborated for in provision. The law requires tourist guides to show proof of competence determined by the South African Qualifications Authority. This chapter also seeks to specify the grounds of qualification for registration as a tourist guide. And then the rest of the chapter deals with matters such as the code of conduct that will be determined by the National Register that tourist guides must comply with, and how to lodge complaints against tourist guides, the power of provincial registers regarding the disqualification of tourist guides, the process that they must follow in terms of dealing with disciplinary measures against tourist guides. When and how an appeal should be lodged and to where as in the National Register who has got the power to look into appeals and bring. The second deals with the general provisions related to the staff bill. It provides for offences and penalties. The DG has already mentioned that there was an offence that is contained in the current legislation that we are taking out, which deals with driving and guiding simultaneously. That is the changes that we have brought in there. Minister has already alluded to the fact that the bill will repeal the current legislation, so we needed to provide for transitional measures to ensure that the smooth transition between the current legal framework and the coming legal framework. I'm not going to say that we are retaining the regulations that have been promulgated in terms of the current legislation to ensure that there's no gap. As soon as the law comes into place, we'll have to relook the subsidiary legislation. Thank you.
That's my pleasure, ma'am. Thank you. Okay. Our initial planning was that we were going to handle the bill chapter by chapter. But on looking at the presentation, that really did not become necessary because we got grading on its own and it's a concept that we are familiar with and so forth. But having said that, I think introducing these provisions, we've got to have people that are competent, right? I don't know whether it should be written in law or it should be written in regulations, because really we have seen a lot of incompetence in some of these statutory bodies. And you go to SAA, you go to some of these state bodies, SAPC and so forth. So I think members are becoming worried that yes, I mean, it's not proper to stipulate what qualifications people have, but I think at the end of the day, the people that we appoint, if they are going to be appointed by us or whomever, they've got to be respected in the industry in the first place because of their experience, because of their qualifications, because of what they've done. Some of these things are not worth sometimes noting or legislating, but there has been a performance that suggests that somewhere around there, we've got to look into these things. They cannot only be assumed, but I'm not saying that it should be legislated as a chairperson, but it's one of the things that as a country moving towards the National Development Plan of 2030, with the beautiful view that we are having of 2030 in that plan, we've got to make every effort in every step of the way to make sure that when we appoint people that are not going to invite controversy, they are not going to invite or perhaps be seen as incompetent or perhaps be incompetent in such a way that your budget gets affected and so forth. So I think in a sense that would be my comment around some of the new things, positions that we are proposing. But before we go for distinct members' participation, I think I don't know whether the South African Tourism Board would like to say something, or the South African Tourism would like to say something before then we start engaging. But we are looking forward to a future where South Africa grows, where we've got more prosperity, we've got inclusive decision making, we've got infrastructure to support our tourism, and so forth. And then secondly, the issue of a tourism protector being equated perhaps with the public protector, I think that is something that we shall discuss and see where it takes us. Perhaps lawyers could assist as well in a more specific terminology if this is not specific enough. Or perhaps we can then scope and say what is in it and what is not in what we are saying, because we've got to make sure that everybody understands what we say the way we understand that one. The issue of the grading system, should it be obligatory, should it be voluntary? If it is voluntary, what do you do and so forth? Those are the debates outside there in the public discourse that we've got to grapple with as South Africans. Our engagement process has started. The submissions to Parliament, the deadline is the 15th of February. We are looking into that. And then the issue of tourist guides. I do not know what authority gives them qualifications, but at one stage there was this issue of them thinking that they should not do first aid all the time and so forth. But the first aid then changes, perhaps you forget or something like that. I don't know. But there was that concern at one stage, and I don't know whether there has been engagement with the tourism guiding profession. around that thing. I'm not saying that it is not important to have first aid courses, but at the same time, I think we've got to try and move together as we are moving forward. And the transitional arrangements, and then the constitutionality and implication of the proposed tourism bill. I think there we shall make our comments towards finalization of the process. But we do not want to have a view before we have hearings, otherwise hearings will be a part. But definitely we need to have clarifications on different things. I think that would be then the pen of honorable members to have their say. I do not know what it's the time now is 11 o'clock. I do not know whether tea has come. If tea is ready, let us break, and then after tea, let us engage. As a committee, we are not having a view. We are going to have hearings. So let's begin. We are not going to have a view before hearings. And then thereafter, then perhaps we can take the process forward. Thank you very much. Over to you. And then you can have your tea in 15 minutes time and come back for engagement and questions of clarification. And then if there are stakeholders that you believe it is important for us to engage, and perhaps who may not be in our listing, in our list, we are prepared to liaise with your good offices to try and enrich our approach in the tourism industry for the sake of a sustainable growth in tourism, quality in tourism, and to create jobs, to create more sustainable livelihoods in the industry, to have a good spread in the industry, to have transformation in the industry, and perhaps look as we move along at 2030 that we've got people that have the capacity to start their businesses. We've got people that have the capacity to promote it because they have enough exposure and qualifications. We make sure that our schools, the school system, produces the type of quality we've got and so forth. So let us then break, have our tea. When we come back, we shall ask questions of clarification, make suggestions, but we shall not express hard views. Thank you.
You want us to
take point? Just briefly on the comment that you made.
If you want to respond, I mean, if that will facilitate the
process. Yeah, I think there are issues that we could provide clarity for us, and I'm just going to raise the question of the competence and qualification of board members that we have to say, and so maybe we could do that before Babu's answer.
Yeah, we may work on our content around those things. We'll work on all these things. Okay, thank I'm going to go to the next one. God. I'm thinking about if we could, after all these things, see when you're 1 page or 2 pages, and then if it's related to MCOP, and then even to Lama member back on, so that is the over 3 years now, going to be clouded, even I'm hearing, people know. Otherwise, if you have the paper, I want to send it to something that has been said, that has been clarified, full clarification. Whereas if you can just say, look at cross calling from, and it makes it easier. And then, secondly, then we are going to ask later when we have finalized, and then we have that short thing, speculated Makokas. So that you have one idea coming around it to Amand Mani Pali. Or and then for the benefit of the Nama Kuma Nama immediately. Who is the punk is where the immediately it is not up to fresh. And the punk is I don't think we are having a very experienced media team at this stage of parliament. But yes, I see things with the experience, the knowledge of you are going to know.
Okay, thanks. Thank you. Thank you.
30 seconds more, then we shall get on with our business. 30 seconds. Good morning once more. Let us continue with our program, but at tea time I received a request from the our legal advisor parliament. So I think before we get into discussions and before the DG addresses us on the initial comments, let us allow the Mr. Advocate Smart, the representing the office of the Chief State Law Advisor, to comment on the bill. And we recognize the concurrency and so forth. Over to you, Advocate.
Thank you, Chief. We've been asked to give an opinion on the constitution, the implications of the bill, and in order to express an opinion, we thought that at least four matters ought to be addressed. One, to what extent the national legislature may legislate on a matter in respect which it has concurrent legislative powers with the provincial legislature. Secondly, as far as the bill as a whole is concerned, whether there is a rational connection between the bill and the legitimate government purpose. Thirdly, whether the regulation of tourist guide profession as contemplated in the bill is constitutional when measured against section 22 of the constitution. And fourthly, the extent of public involvement in the finalization of the bill. I believe there are copies of our opinion available. I'll try to summarize the document, which is fairly lengthy. As to the first matter, to what extent national legislator may legislate on a matter in respect of which it has concurrent legislative powers with provincial legislature, following, tourism is listed in Schedule 4 of the Constitution as one of the functional areas of concurrent national and provincial legislative competence. In terms of Section 44 of the Constitution, the national legislative authority, as vested in Parliament, confers on the National Assembly the power to pass legislation with regard to any matter, including a matter within the functional area of Section 4, and also confers on the NCOB the power to pass in accordance with Section 76 legislation with regard to any matter within the functional area of Section 4. In terms of Section 44.3 of the Constitution, legislation with regard to matter that is reasonably necessary or incidental to the effective exercise of power concerning any matter listed in Schedule 4 is for all purposes legislation with regard to matter listed in Schedule 4. Based on the sections I've referred to, It's clear that the inner and the interior team may legislate on any matter falling within the special area listed in Schedule 4 in our case tourism, provided that such legislation is dealt with in accordance with the procedure established by Section 76 or 76.1 or 2. Such legislation may include legislation with regard to a matter that reasonably necessary for or is linked to the effective exercise of power concerning any matter listed in Schedule 4. It's clear that the Constitution authorizes the national legislature to legislate on matters such as tourism. As regards the second matter, whether there is a rational connection between the whole and the legitimate government purpose, our Constitution bids the executive and the parties to prepare and initiate legislation and the legislature to make the laws. This wide lawmaking power is, however, subject to constitutional control. In the well-known Affordable Medicine Judgment, the Constitutional Court pointed out that the exercise of all legislative powers subject to these two constitutional controls, constraints. First, there must be a rational connection between the legislation and the achievement of a legitimate government purpose. And second, legislation must not infringe any of the fundamental rights enshrined in the Constitution. Now, the rational connection constraint entails that all legislation must comply with the principle of legality, which is a core element of the rule of law on which our Constitution is based. The legality principle requires that executive and all orders of state may exercise no power and perform no function beyond that conferred upon them by law. Where legislation is arbitrary or capricious, it offends the principle of legality because there is no rational connection between the legislation and the legitimate government purpose it seeks to achieve. Now, the bill contains several important measures which are not covered in the current Tourism Act. For example, Clause 4 calls upon the Minister of Tourism to adopt a national tourism sector strategy to promote the objects of the bill. This provision will in effect compel the Minister to focus the conduct of the government as far as tourism is concerned on those matters that are mentioned in the clause. In this regard, it requires the national tourism sector strategy to provide at least the strategies, objectives, indicators, tasks, plans, guidelines, procedures, and institutional arrangements relating to the promotion, development, and transformation of tourism. The strategy will be developed in an all-inclusive manner, requiring the Minister, before adopting the strategy, to publish this report, to invite comments, and to consider any representations. In our view, proposed Clause 4 will play a major role in the executive relation to tourism, develops policies contemplated in Section 85(2)(b) of the Constitution. Formulating appropriate and realistic national policy regarding tourism, taking into account the fact that tourism is one of the most important industries in the country, is, in our view, a duty consonant to responsible governance. Taking Clause 4 and, for example, Clauses 5, 6, 7, 8, and 28 of the Bill into account, we are of the view that the Bill seeks to ensure that suitable policies and strategies are developed with a view to promoting one of the major industries of the country. It stands to reason that the promotion of our country's tourism industry is a legitimate government purpose. We are thus of the view that there is a rational connection between the scheme which the bill seeks to adopt and the achievement of a legitimate government purpose, and consequently that the bill in this respect is constitutional. The next matter I want to deal with is whether the regulation of the tourist guide profession as contemplated in the bill is constitutional when measured against Section 22 of the Constitution. Section 22 provides that every citizen has the right to choose their trade, occupation, or profession freely. The practice of a trade, occupation, or profession may be regulated by law. As the case of our Parliament's general rulemaking powers, the power to regulate a profession is likewise subject to constitutional control. Again, in the Affordable Medicines Trust judgment, the Constitutional Court put it as follows. legislation that regulates practice will pass constitutional muster if A, it is rationally related to the achievement of a legitimate government purpose, and B, it does not infringe any of the rights in the Bill of Rights. What the Constitution therefore requires is that the power to regulate the practice of a profession be exercised in an objectively rational manner. As long as the regulation of a practice viewed objectively is rationally related to the legitimate government purpose, a court cannot interfere simply because it disagrees with or considers the legislation to be inappropriate. So for the quotation. The bill seeks, amongst other matters, as I said, to regulate the profession of tourist guides. Those measures are aimed at ensuring that persons who choose the profession comply with a certain standard. Taking into account the fact that the tourist industry is of major importance to our country and its economy, it can, in our view, safely be said that in order to make most of tourism as a valuable asset, the government has a duty to ensure that the profession of tourist guide is properly regulated. In this regard, the regulation of the profession of tourist guide with a view to determining who may provide services and requirements that tourist guide must comply with may, in our view, legitimately be regulated by the state. It can also be stated, in our view, that the public has a direct interest in being assured that those who hold themselves out as professionals in the field of tourism are who they claim to be and that they practice their profession in accordance with accepted standards. Thus, in our view, there is a rational connection between the scheme which the bill envisages and a legitimate government purpose. As for whether the requirement that the person who wishes to be registered as a tourist guide must show proof of competence impact negatively on the choice of a profession or limit the right to become a tourist guide, I would like to refer to Section 36 of the Constitution, which provides that the right in the Bill of Rights may be limited only in terms of your general application to the extent that the limitation is reasonable and justifiable in an open democratic society based on human dignity, equality and freedom, taking into account all relevant factors, including for example, the nature of the right, the importance of the purpose of limitation, the nature and extent of the limitation, etc. We have no doubt that the bill is a law of general application. It will apply generally to anyone who wishes to pursue the profession of tourist guide, and in this sense, the bill can be said to be unequal or arbitrary in its application. The question whether a limitation on a choice of occupation is justifiable in terms of the Constitution involves the weighing up of competing values and ultimately an assessment based on proportionality. That's what's said in this. The requirement contained in clause 52, namely that a person must show proof of particular competence, is based on the National Qualifications Framework provided for in the National Qualifications Framework Act. In terms of Section 4 of that Act, the NQF, the National Qualifications Framework, is a comprehensive system approved by the Minister of Higher Education for the classification, registration, publication and articulation of quality-assured national qualifications. The objectives of the NQF are to create a single integrated national framework for learning achievement, to facilitate access to and mobility and provision within education, training and career paths, thirdly, enhance the quality of education to training and possibly accelerate the regress of past discrimination in education, training and employment opportunities. Now, as you most probably know, NQF is organized as a series of level of learning achievements arranged in ascending order from level 1 to level 10. Level 1 being the equivalent of grade 9, roughly, in scholastic achievement, and level 10 being the equivalent of a doctoral degree. Currently, provision is made for at least 2 tourism certificates at NQF level 1, namely the General Education Training Certificate Tourism and the General Education Training Certificate Traveling Tourism. In order to achieve the qualification joint education training certificate tourism in NQF level 1. A prospective candidate must obtain a required number of credits of wide section of UTIN standards. The qualification may however also be achieved in part or as a whole through the recognition of prior learning. According to the culture, arts, tourism, hospitality and sports sector education and training authority long name, established under the Skills Development Act, a person who has obtained the above mentioned qualification will have, quote, a firm foundation of portable skills for further learning, an overview of key issues and practices in the tourism industry, and entry skills and knowledge relating to a specific area of tourism. Learners of this qualification will also gain an introductory knowledge of tourism industry, enabling them to understand the nature of tourism, recognize entrepreneurial opportunities in tourism, and apply core skills such as customer care in order to promote tourism. In our view, a consideration of the requirements to become a tourism guide on NQF level 1 shows that qualification seeks to provide an entry-level qualification which will be recognized nationally and which will be of value to the person who obtains it. While acquiring a particular qualification in order to practice the profession of tourist guide, another important purpose is served, namely, as a measure which seeks to ensure that tourism services of a particular quality and standard are provided. Furthermore, taking into account the importance of tourism industry for our country and for our economy, it stands to reason that the government has a direct interest in ensuring that tourist guides, even at the entry level, hold qualifications that will be to the advantage of the industry. Thus, in our view, it appears and might be argued that the qualification requirement contemplated in clause 50 sub 2 of the bill limits the right of the person to choose the profession of the tourist guide. We are of the view that requirement is proportional to the right in question. We are thus of the view that requirement is a reasonable and justifiable limitation as part of the section 56 of the Constitution. Lastly, I just want to refer to a few points that the Constitutional Court has given in respect of the extent of public involvement in finalization of the bill. In terms of section 59(1)(a) of the Constitution, the NA must facilitate public involvement in the legislative and other processes of the Assembly and its committees. Section 72(1)(a) of the Constitution contains a similar provision in respect of the NCFB. In a seminal judgment of Dr. Belize, which concerns section 72(1)(a) and others, the CC made several pronouncements on the constitutional requirements of facilitating public involvement. What the court said in respect of section 72(1)(a), in my view, equally applies to section 59(1)(a) in respect of the NA. First, said the ordinary meaning of section 72(1)(a) is that steps must be taken to ensure that the public participate in the legislative process. Further, our constitutional framework requires the achievement of balanced relationship between representative and participatory elements of our democracy. Thirdly, Parliament has a significant measure of discretion in determining how best to fulfill its duty to facilitate public involvement. What is required will vary from case to case. In all of these, the legislature must act reasonably in carrying out its duty to facilitate public involvement in its process. Fourthly, the court said, whether the legislature has acted reasonably in discharging its duty to facilitate public involvement will depend on a number of factors. The nature and importance of the legislation and the intensity of its impact on the public are especially relevant. Reasonableness also requires that appropriate account be paid to practicalities such as time and expense, which relate to the efficiency of the related lawmaking process. Yet the saving of money and time itself does not justify inadequate opportunities for public involvement. In addition, the evaluation, in evaluating the reasonableness of Parliament's conduct, the court will have regard to what Parliament itself considers to be appropriate
public involvement in the light of the legislation's content, importance, and urgency. Further remark that the court made is the following. What is ultimately important is that the legislature has taken steps to afford the public a reasonable opportunity to participate effectively in the law-making process. Thus, there are at least two aspects of the duty to facilitate public involvement. First, the duty to provide meaningful opportunities for public participation. Second, the duty to take measures to ensure that people have the ability to take advantage of the opportunities provided. In this sense, public involvement may be seen as a continuum that ranges from providing information building awareness to partnering in decision-making. Thus, so far the quotations from the judgment in complying with section 59(1)(a) and 72 of the Constitution, Parliament will have to perform its functions with due regard to the pronouncement made by the CC. I hope I have addressed the request by the Commission. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Lenin Advocate. Yes, it's quite a mouthful. Government is tough, but we've got to face it and look at each and every step and try and see whether there is a definition or a working definition of this public. Because sometimes we mention some of these terms and then we do not mention the scope of the public, being public representative ourselves. So, well, that will be an issue that is going to be heard and discussed, and then I hope that there is going to be interaction between the legal advisor of the department and the chief state law advisor, because there has to be that working together. I think together we are going to perform much better. But I don't think that there are a lot of things that are not in line with the Constitution, as the advocate has said. But having said that, I think it's something that has to be thought over, that has to be discussed going forward. But thank you very much, Advocate, and over to you, our esteemed speaker.
Just two things before maybe you open up and invite honorable members to share with us some of the things that they think we need to strengthen or take this process forward. You raised essentially two pertinent issues. One with regard to the qualification of people we put in the board, the very important the board of SAT and the whole management of SAT. We've tried our best, fortunately I was part of the last appointment of the board, to really look at a very competent and qualified South African who bring a lot of diversity into the board of SAT. If you look at the composition of the board of SAT, we've looked at people across the spectrum of our side to ensure that we are not denying ourselves of their contribution in terms of modeling and shaping the type of the tourism industry that we want to create in the country. So that has been taken care of. Having said that, chairperson, competence and incompetence is a voluntary process. People may decide to become incompetent. There are a lot of factors that play into that, not only in the SAT board, even in the department. We decide to become incompetent. It's a voluntary process. No one forces us to be incompetent. If the system forces us to be very competent, but it expects that deliverable. So that is one thing that is too subjective to manage and deal with it. But I think the system is there to deal with any incompetency, including in the department and in the SAT. Now, Madison Kitchen, our chief legal advisor, she has looked into how other countries are dealing with the tourism for Texas as is reflected now. Maybe she would come up with some of the issues that we're looking at, and that will form part of the consultation as we move forward. Chairperson, maybe it would be good also to open up, before you re-allow honorable members to start raising issues, open up with the CEO of the Alaskan Tourism to deal with the matter relating to grading council, to just take us through that, because you raised that in an open remark, in an opening remark. Similarly, you raised the question of the convention bureau so that you can take us into confidence how far we are, so that if one of the members wants to pursue further matter, they have the background and the details about how far we are in as far as it is concerned. The question of qualification for tourist guide is very essential. And I'm really glad that the advocate is clearly articulated and the process that we've undertaken as a department that we operate within the prescript of the law so far. But it's very crucial when it comes to the whole regional promotion of tourism. We've seen this in actual sense when it comes to our matter with the Namibians. It was a challenge sometimes ago to move tourists across Namibia into South Africa. Because the tourist guides, essentially they provide some level of protection for our product. They are able to interpret our product in a manner that tourists would understand. There was a challenge around bringing the Namibian across the border, but quite clearly later on it turned out we are the ones who are training the Namibian tourist guides. So the level of qualification and competence is the same as us. It has been a challenge between us and the Sotho. We've really managed to resolve it through a really qualified system of tourist guides who are trained in terms of articulating the product. It also provides some level of protection for our product. We don't want people to go around and misinterpret the product that we spend so much millions of rand to sell around the world, and when they arrive here, the manner in which they explain to people is not in line with that. So there's some level of protection of our own industry, and it helps to really get people qualified. I mean, over and above providing opportunities and creating a profession, essentially, in our society for people who are in the state. It has a lot of benefits. I mean, what I'm mentioning is part of it. I think people who are involved in the industry, they may be able to tell you more in terms of the benefit of really professionalizing this. But then if you allow, I'll just allow Majitonki to read some of the research that she's been doing overnight with respect to the tourism project, how do they call them in different countries, and the suggested terminology. Then now in the fact that the process of this draft bill is your process now, Chairperson, who would also make a contribution into that process as you go through consultation. So I think you can do that with your permission, then the CEO would make this remark. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Most legislation specifically speaks to what we have done, what we have been doing as a country, meaning relying on the consumer affairs legislation and not necessarily having a separate dispensation for tourism, the management of complaints by tourists. We are one of the first countries that are really providing for mechanisms for handling tourist complaints. And I was saying this morning to DG that the naming of tourism protection at the stage when we were coming up with this dispensation, it was largely to mirror what is available within the Consumer Protection Act. And I think it influenced us naming this official tourism protector. Now we have realized that it means something very big when in essence the function that we're entrusting upon the protector is to ensure that the sufficient dispute resolution mechanism within the industry itself, that is by way of accreditation of claims, and also to refer complaints, because indeed we do receive complaints within the department, and we will provide for the protector to be able to send them over to authorities that can deal. We looked at what will other jurisdictions call this pattern is going to be ending complaints. And the civil name that we are going to be suggesting will discuss it with the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor. We will discuss it name that will reflect the duties of this person will be a tourism complaint and skin accreditation of the skin. This person is going to be, the office of the department is going to be designated by the minister for them to be able to deal with the complaint, handling the complaint. So to reflect on both the two legs of the function, meaning the handling tourism complaint and the recommendation of skin. A gentleman will name the tourism complaint and skin accreditation. But that is the subject that to the Adobe House that we have been working very close in the state law rights advocate Leonard Smith. We have always run past them whatever it is that we are bringing into the country. Thank you.
Okay, just before the CEO responds, let us say I'm a tourist operator. And I'm happy about another police operator who is damaging the image of the businesses in tourism. Do I also go to the tourism protector?
The function will be to protect the function. It will be to protect the credibility of the tourism sector. Let's take a typical example that may occur. A tourist guide. A operates in suburb areas here, and B operates in Google A2. And then A would tell tourists to say it's not safe to go to Google A2, it's not like this. That's something that we need to, it needs to be brought in and it can be dealt with within that, because people must operate within the their professional competencies. The role here is not to invest another project, but it's to sell their own product. So those are things that we already have to manage, which have been happening in this country for quite some time. But now we are building a framework to be able to deal with those kind of contradictions. That sometimes we really don't have to bash ourselves in order to try to promote the same industry, to understand that there's a certain level of interdependence. And our point of view from here is that if an incident or crime happens in Google A2, a tourist will see in the US or in China, it's Sarah. So the whole brand is based off. We need to manage those dynamics between the sectors and system. And I think it will bring some level of professionalism. The advocate will tell you lawyers don't usually criticize each other, they have different opinions when they come up with their issue.
Oh, that's fine, because really, if I meet a tourist guy who drinks together with tourists and then ends up not doing their work well, then they have to be complete. Okay, over to you,
Jefferson, thank you very much. I'll be very short. The department via the DG is leading the process on our behalf. But on two points that have been raised, first with regards to the grading hassle, I forgot to tender an apology earlier on behalf of Tendi Kunene, who is the chief quality assurance officer for the grading council. She underwent an operation and is advised not to travel, and she can't even drive at this stage. So sincere apologies for not having mentioned it at the beginning. The grading council is an ongoing concern at the moment, has been doing a lot of good work. It is assisted by a committee consisting of independent industry players who are experts in different fields. We have also reviewed the systems that we are using to automate the process and eliminate the manual intervention when it comes to trading. New standards have been introduced, which are a little bit more stringent than we previously had. This may, at the beginning, an introduction of this process have slowed down uptake with regard to new members, but we are very confident that going forward we have a solid system in place that is credible and is delivering the desired results. We have also, as a result of this automation, reduced the number of monthly meetings that we used to have for the committee sitting down and manually grading the facilities to now meeting on a quarterly basis. with a lot more efficiency and putting through a lot of properties in the system. We have seen a lot of D&D kind of establishment coming into the equation, and in this western province area we are at this stage looking at getting about 1,200 establishments that were previously under the administration of the Western Cape, and it's a very interesting process that we are going through. So there is a lot of good work that we are doing. We have improved a lot of processes, and the consultation processes that we embark on the roadshow, to consult with all key stakeholders before we make any changes. So that is working very well. The National Convention Bureau, which has also been touched on, is already up and running. Amanda is in charge of the National Convention Bureau. I think all we can do now to reflect a little bit on the successes of the National Convention Bureau so far in equipping the various convention bureaus and the convention centers, effectively creating one point of reference when it comes to information regarding the bidding for business events in South Africa. We have had successful roadshow consultations which have given enormous support to the work of the Convention Bureau. A very key platform of the Convention Bureau is the Meetings Africa that we are going to have in the next week. It provides a platform for showcasing South Africa and Africa's business event capability, and this is the platform that in effect reflects that we win as Africa, including South Africa, of course. So we have had all these good successes via the Convention Bureau. We will be telling at the next board meeting. A National Convention Marketing Subcommittee structure, which will be a forum advising the National Convention on the best practices in the industry. It will be a group of independent experts coming from various provinces and centers, which we believe will give the National Convention Bureau more impetus and credibility when it deals with the industry. It will be the recommendation that we're taking to the board is that it will be chaired by one of the appointed board members of South African Tourism, but the rest of the members will come from the industry. It does not have legislative power. It is a subcommittee of the marketing committee, which is part of the legislative framework. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, CEO. I think that is all from the side of the department so far. And then let us all remember at all times that what we are doing is for the credibility of the state at the end of the day. The state being an institution that in the government in perpetuity, irrespective of who is in government. So what we are doing, we've got to do and in a way that says what we say we do. When we legislate, it is for a good purpose, and we have competent people. But people can work well, as the majority, that is 98%. But if there is that 2% that is not working well, then people talk about 2% and forget about 98%. And the former President Mandela used to say that when a forest grows, everything is silent. You may have 1,000 trees, it is quiet, it is silent. But if one tree falls, then there's a big noise out of all the thousand trees. So let us just make sure that wherever we are, whatever we do the best we can. We are the best we can be. That is the message from our side before the questions of clarification. I do not know how you want us to deal with that, or should this be each member a question, or perhaps I just respond to him. Okay, Mangalana and Mr. Shah.
Gentlemen, I would like to thank the department for what they have just presented to the community. But first of all, I must say that we have learned a lot from the presentation. Somehow, we have been answered. We had quite a number of things whereby one did not just understand what was going on. But today, I must say, it's a bit clear on my side. We all know, Chairperson, that tourism industry, being the economic engine of our country, I still feel that we, as representatives of the people, we need to stand and see to it that matters concerning grading systems, councils, toll guides, school systems, etc., are handled with care. It is not just a matter of a member of parliament, a member of this committee, to go on oversight because it has been proposed by the Jefferson, by whoever. It is us, as an individual, to stand up and visit certain areas to see. For instance, let's take the case of B&B, guest house. I must say and emphasize that it's high time that the provincial government will have to stand. It shouldn't be only Western B. That the national government knows how it's functioning and everything. Because you say to yourself, I'm not going to have a test. I'm going to a B&B because I'm a member of this committee. I just want to see what is happening. When you get there, you find that things are just, you know, no grading is done. Can you imagine getting to a B&B that's not even the smallest TV to look and get news or whatever?
Are you talking about the graded establishment?
Yes. Yes, Chairman. You find there is no such, not even one or two. They don't even know about grading for that matter. But I believe the provincial government of that certain province must be doing a good job. You know? They just know that when you have a B&B, you want to get money. The rest, same level. I want to make an example, Chairperson. I visited one of the B&Bs when I was there. In a small room, you know, of the size too. This is too big. There are three beds. Small room. They are three beds to be occupied by different tourists no wardrobe, no TV, no rubbish bin. When you go to the bathroom, nothing in the very same room, nothing. The B&B, there's a board somewhere. A special name. And then you just feel that, I haven't done my job. Who must do it? And one other thing, Captain, I saw feel one day, as a comet, we must meet these people who are doing this tour guiding training. Just for our own interest, to hear from them how it goes. It's an institute, as for example, then. How is the training? I've never been. And how I wish to go. Those projects are very, very important. They are these people. And I've just learned the letters that they act as protectors, isn't it?
The tourism protector is just going to somebody else. The tourism guide is another chapter.
Well, I must say that those are the people, because a tourist would love to have a tour guide that knows care. You know, it's not just somebody who sits in the car and keeps quiet and not even knowing the area where the toys are going to. Who is confused in such a, you know. But I just had interest one day to meet those trainers. Well, the grading system, it worries me the most. What can we do to make it a point that the B&Bs that we have do have the grading council must see to it that something is really done, because it brings down the standard of this department. But now, to conclude, Jefferson, they even say that, well, our people, they put up this B&B and they are at a good level of standard, but only because they are not supported. Why? Because some people feel they must not go to that B&B is being run by a plan or whatever. They must go to the city, to town. I don't know how can we try and treat that one. For those who do have the ones that have been graded correctly, so to be supported. Thank you.
Thank you, Ma. Yeah, sometimes it's not a race issue. It becomes a marketing issue and the lack of support of the entrepreneur, the style of entrepreneur. So let us try and avoid, except if we have specific example where it's an issue of race. Let us try and avoid that thing, except if we've got a specific I'm not saying that. I'm just trying to say that because it's not an issue. It's an issue of monitoring those establishments. Mr. Shah.
Thank you, person. I too like to thank the National Department and relevant authorities and aid for enlightening us, shedding some light on matters on which we are going to have to make decisions, legislate.
The minister, I think, also preempted many of the issues that I wanted to, or concerns, areas of concern that I had, as well as the DG, to some extent, also preempted some of the concerns. So the thoughts that I articulate here are not necessarily policy position or anything, as you said. These are just thoughts to stimulate debate and argument. I agree when they spoke about the tourism to Tam Protector, and I'm glad that they are addressing that one. The concern, Chair, that I have, a little bothered, but principled one. We want to establish an office such as Tourism Protector, name which we will deal with later on, but the very notion of having an office to receive complaints and then also this office is supposed to process a complaint. Now, is it necessary to establish an independent statutory body when a national department ought to have a capacity and a section dealing with, as I've seen in other countries, with processing of it? Do we necessarily have to have a legislation making provision for such an entity? Not only that, if we took that argument to try to digress from there, I mean, look at the Tourism Gravy Council, for example. Okay? Now, if history is anything to go by, we know, we've been oversight. And we know they were inconsistent. They were legitimate challenges, we know them. But they were all inconsistent. Even you heard the frustrations from our colleague in terms of having a stand in the board. We are actually taking that away now from SA Tourism. And now, it's going to be a statutory body, independent, and then we're going to put somebody in charge of this body. And then Clause 446 to authorize the minister to assign oversight over the council. And but I'm just wondering, what's going to take? I mean, what the difference is that going to make?
So you're asking about the capacity and resources that...
I am saying, every time
the department fails in doing something, are we going to have a separate... Like now we're going to have a quality assurance person, we're going to have... Each time we establish an institution, then that will have its own organogram, and then another one, and then another one. Where is this all going to go? So, and then I'd like also to find out, what was the thinking behind Clause 44? The minister will assign oversight responsibility either to the department or another suitable body not envisaged, not described here. Now, certainly, it says, trying to explain why it would be so. The purpose of the provision is to give the minister a discretion which may be exercised as circumstance requires. So in fact, there is really no singular body that will have oversight of this thing, because the minister is going to have to decide now, according to the circumstances, okay, you take care of it. Now you're delegating, you do this, okay, you go and see this. Really, where is the thing? You get a picture. The picture I'm trying to create. So I'm saying that there are many other, you know, for example, I have this concept, okay, when it comes to tourist guides. How do you define who is tourist guide? In our country, do we have a singular standard curriculum design, whether it's at the SAT college level, whether it is at a high school level, whether it is a trained college for tourists? Are these standards? Number one. Number two, if somebody wants to be a tourist guide and they haven't, you know, come under the NCFA, you know, standards established, does that individual going to, is he going to be or she be doomed for life? Never to be a guide simply because they have no access financially or otherwise to an institution that can actually give them that level of education so that they can become proficient. And I was just thinking also, These are not concrete. I'm not saying that it shouldn't be. We need sense, so obviously we need to regulate, obviously. But we also have to take into account these imbalances that we have also inherited from the past, and very well happening today. Let's look at planned village. A tourist bus enters a Zulu village or a sand village for cultural tourism. It is advertised all over the world. Here comes this young sand or Kui, young man, who knows the culture, he knows the traditions, he knows the place, he knows the environment. These are not things that he can learn at the university and get a diploma, okay? Are we suggesting that this young sand, whose life is so close to Earth, Mother Earth, and is so in touch with the sky and the sun and the moon and the sun, that he can't do this job because he doesn't have the diploma, which Mr. Shah, who's got this master's and the diploma and all of it, but I don't know him and his people as much as he does. So, gentlemen and women, I think there are many things. It's okay if we make these, you know, counter arguments against the notion that, you know, qualification requirements contemplated in clause 52 limits right of the person to choose the person who is guide. Now the legal state advisor has looked at it, and then we have made a very strong case and a counter argument. It is not so. It may all be true. The question is, are we saying, ladies and gentlemen, that in a San or Zulu or Kosa village, any other type of village where there is cultural tourism going on, where people are close to their culture, that if that gentleman attempted to say to them, come, I will show you for that, that he would be violating some law in this country. There are many things, but I'll leave you with this part.
Ele corre more que mula. Acho que me imamo a boca.
Thank you, Professor. I'm also joining those discussions. The workshop has informed us here. Anyone that giving us presentation at the department is very happy. And really hoping that this legislation is really going to turn the tide around in terms of there is this notion of, also I'm happy that all of the things I alluded to is that there is not a lack of information. And I'm happy also that now this department, local government, now will know that it has a responsibility in local people of tourism. Because when it comes to our people, tourism is nobody's business. They do their own thing. They don't get information properly because all these things are far from them. Now that is going to be decentralized. So that people on the ground that Mr. Shah is talking about would be informed exactly what to do. And also, I think it would be proper that this thing of grading, it's not made for somebody that wants, if you don't want it, you cannot grade. Because at the end of the day, it gives problems. It would do as such. If then everybody must be graded. Looking into it, that our BNP, there are people that are starting their business. You look just at the fee, a standard fee, that the starting fee of the credit to credit the BNP that is so big, it will be misleading. So that person can also be graded. And there are people really in this information, they record this information. If you have their BNP made beautiful, I have been into another BNP. Here in Kenya. That lady said, somebody came to me. She said, I must fix this and that. And said, I fixed all those things that I was asked to fix. After I said that, nobody is coming. And I don't know where to go. And I don't know how it's going to be done. And when I was doing this, it was so beautiful standing at there. I said that you can send people into this BNP. But she was saying, I don't know how to defend that now. Because that has came and said 60%. He never or she never came back again. So those things, I think, is that those things have been regulated so that at least in the community, you know, as they in your province, in your region, where to go, where to take this person, who are those people that are responsible for creating this establishment. So those things, I think it's going to have information. Also, the city and mentoring. This is it, the method. You do sometimes your COC, if there is a thing that is going to be there, you must be mentored for what you have started. You cannot just start and see and think you are helping it. So those mentoring mechanisms, I think they are going to put in place. Then our business is going to fly. We are saying tourism is one of the job creation programs in South Africa. So let it be. Let us have it with a glass so that it can benefit people that can manage to do it. Because they are not good in that, but there are people that are good in that. Even in terms of this thing of life, everyone needs to learn people that are having degrees. There are people that really know that culture. You can raise them up and tell them, you go there, this is this thing, how to do this thing, you do it like this. If you enter here, you do this and this and that. So, how are those people going to get their degrees of what they know? It will need to be looked into that they are satisfied for what they know. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you. The next question has got to us to be around Kepfeta, what are the requirements of the NQF and what are the requirements of the Kepfeta and the cultural and tourism and the hospitality sector. But I do not know what the requirements are. Could be that, I don't know, but I think the department should have to clarify that. The issue of grading, I think, is not yet obligatory, but it is still voluntary according to the Act. But how do we make it more benefit people than better graded? I think that is the question that has to be answered. How do we make people that are graded benefit incentives? Yeah. That the incentives. And then I don't know whether there are other members that want to ask questions of clarification. Mama, let's go.
Hello, good morning, Mamunjo. We received your apology. That's now Mama
Upengo. We received your apology anyway. Okay, over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Let me also welcome the presentation of the draft bill and also say that it's an eye-opener in some of the areas that watch it. Two, I totally agree with you with the notion that says that our committee advisor and the state law advisor should be closely in terms of discussing and engaging on this act so that we move at unison. Two, three, Chair. In terms of, I just want to be cool on this one. It's not in relation to the Act, it's the processes. The public input, the closing date is on Friday.
Yes.
This is the date, this Friday. I'm not too sure how to be. Ensure that the input from the sector or the part of the communities of South Africa that still inverted commas, still that are left out, like your rural communities in particular, because probably the people that are well vested in terms of the resources, in terms of your IT systems that they have, and also your radios, some of the networks, the radio doesn't work because of the. So I'm not sure, but I'm leaving that one just for my observation that it should be my question that probably one of the good days of government will also talk to that. Because I also stay in KwaZulu-Natal, but in an urban area. But I don't remember within my municipality where I reside, the role of the municipality ensuring that also this bill is popularized the draft bill in terms of people to give, make input. For me, that's an amazing area of concern that I thought as we revise the act in terms of the bill, we will talk to the issues of the transformation as it may, whether in terms of your guides, in terms of your BNB and all those things. It's very silent. One note that the tourism as an industry is not a private driven one, but in terms of the regulation and the infrastructure that the government invests, there must be sort of invented commas, and then you care that fossil some of this in the industry. Because it seems like as a department also in terms of tourism, we move the flow. We don't want to rock the boat, and I'm not too sure why. So I'm dealing with that, and I'm raising that in terms of the transformation in its totality. It could be in terms of also the fourth point. It's within what my colleagues, the honorable members, have also raised, is the issue of the consistency of grading. There are intervals, supposedly, of grading which are not consistent. Which then, in return, does do the disservice to the people of BNBs and all that, the mini workers and so forth and so forth. So I'm saying probably we need to look at that in terms of the grading culture to see how to ensure that we spread our wings with the limited human resources that we have. Which you would not necessarily put it in the draft bill to say that one has to be that as it is a win. Fifthly, Chair, is the issue of, I don't know whether it's, I think just the word that has been used here, is the complaints and scheme accreditation officer or office. One note that it's more, if I may allow to say, it's more or less not quiet, a toothless one, but also a very frightening body-like. And I'm not too sure whether the industry or the individuals or the group or the sectors of control that go to the office, would it be taken serious? What mechanism? And I'm sure the answer would not be detailed on that one, but I'm flagging it out so that the department can deal with that. Which then my left front colleague have raised in terms of, although he raised it in a funny way, where I'm sitting, in terms of that you're creating entities and shifting the responsibility and the core responsibility of the department and the ministry as it may. And I'm saying even that, we need just be mindful that we don't also with our little resources in terms of the financials that we create the body at the end of the day they don't make any difference. Still. The issue of, Michael's chair has raised the issue, which is not, the act would not, but in terms of the standard, it will talk to that. The content of the talk, in terms of the correct, original history of the facility or the area. Some of these young ones, which I like them because they've got a very fluent English and a very nice accent. But however, some of us with our age, we can still go to Nairobi. You can only tell somebody who doesn't live in South Africa the information, but you cannot question that because she or he has been trained. But I'm saying even the content of the knowledge should be the original one, not the polluted one. One will appreciate that one, and I'm sure instead of whoever formulated the curriculum and so forth, it will be addressed on that. That was my take, Chair, once more to thank the engagement and the workshop provided for us. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mandra.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I'm going to use this my colleagues. I really have a lot of homework to cover. I feel like a school child who has got it less than now, exams are coming.
There were a piece of truancy.
Yeah. we will be looking at the bill. I take it personal in details in the future. I do hope that I'll be able to come around. I'm sorry I made the presentation. The ministers and the teachers and the others. I only participation in the constitutionality of political bills. Now, a lot has been said about the consultation. We all know that consultation, when we are formulating bills in our country, is very, very important. And I think it is encouraging to find that some consultation has been done. I see here in one of the documents that about 450 submissions were received by the department. That's what I was looking for answered when the presentation was being made. I was wondering whether the department itself has had some consultations. If that is the case, then I take it that there was a lot of participation. That is, this is 450 I am looking about. Actually, a presentation that they made to the department alone, because we still have to do it ourselves, the committee, and the NGOP, if the bill goes there, they also still have to do it, depending on how much we will do and the NGOP will do. I take it that at the end, if we are going at that rate, we will have done a good job. But however, there is something that I'm not quite happy about. Reading the bill itself at the end on consultation. The main one is looking at sometimes the practice, the usual practice, that you actually get a list of some of these consultations, particularly important ones that have been done by the department, so that we too as a committee, when we now invite the public to come and make presentations, we know, you know, which ones the department has already consulted. I find that when you refer to the private sector, we just say the private sector. It doesn't give us an idea of who you exactly mean in the private sector. For me, it is a very useful thing, for instance. When you talk of the private sector, you will have at least, I know there are many, but probably at least some of them, not so that we exactly know who you discuss with. For these foundations, that's a lot. But just to say private sector, I wonder whether in the private sector, what for instance my colleague has just said here, we have had interaction with all the lenders, that's what the list enables us to see, you know, the variety of the submissions, because the forest industry is such a broad industry. It includes those with a lot of experience who have who are already, you know, experts in the industry. But in our country, it also includes those who are also starting. So we want to see whether they have also had the opportunity to make some decisions in the department. Yeah, that's what I wanted to say. And lastly, I see on slide 10 is something that interests me, but I am not quite sure if I'm understanding it well. At last, as we left there on slide 20, it says the standardized budget structure for provincial departments. A standardized budget structure for provincial departments has been approved by the National Treasury. I'm sure you may perhaps have explained. If you have, please just ignore my question. But if not, can you just enlighten me on that? Thank you very much.
Okay, I think we had everything quite close had the clarification for.
Because it is also very important that when a bill comes to the committee and the bill, for instance, is not well drafted and so on, it proposals and a lot of work for the committee, if anything has been. But if the bill is well drafted, I want to believe it is, from the time it has taken and the amount of work that you think it has done and the very work of its staff, I want to believe that the bill is well drafted and that we have left work to do as a committee. Thank you.
Okay, perhaps one question around the grading council emanating from a hearing that we had from the PNP and Guest House Owners Association. I don't know the exact name. I've been trying to look at that hearing. I think it's elsewhere in another book. Where they had said that the approach of the grading council is that one of one size fits all. Whether you are a guest house or you are a bush camp owner or you own an industry with different dynamics and needs, the approach to grading was the same. 12 cook angles, a TV set of this sort, and so forth and so forth. There was a complaint from this small, I don't know now what they called themselves, but we had a hearing from them. I don't know whether any one of you still remembers. But I think that was the issue. And then there is this monitoring body of the minister. Does it already have resources of its own? Does it have people that are paid, that have offices and computers and so forth, the resources that they need? Or it is going to be existing people in the department that are going to assist the minister to monitor the grading and to monitor the performance. And lastly, the bill is not clear whether it is only going to be monitoring accommodation only and or it is going to be monitoring the other forms of tourism. There was an understanding that it would be monitoring the different types of distinct services, whether it be taxis or shuttles and that type of thing, in order to make sure that the quality of service is up to scratch or the consumer knows exactly what they are going for whenever they choose a certain, say, shuttle or something like that. I think that over and above what has been asked, I think we need to be clear there. Mr. Shah, I do want to add something. Just add something to what you said. We'll have another take after lunch, because our lunch is in 10 minutes time, and I do not know whether the caterers are already here. Are they here? Okay. So we are expecting caterers at 1 o'clock. So what happens when you respond, I shall stop you at 1 o'clock so that we have warm food and then come back at 2 o'clock.
Exactly. This relates to the implementation of the process. The grading system has been transformed to international best practice. Firstly, I'm not too sure what are we benchmarking against, say, international best practice. Have you taken into account that we are a developing country? And are we expecting too much for some person who doesn't have access to funding to reach a certain norm or certain standard? And now we want to say that we have now transformed into this practice. So what are we benchmarking ourselves given the realities of our socioeconomic life in our country? Then it also says this confusing. It says ministry is authorized to determine norms and standards and indicators to measure compliance with such norms and standards. Now this relates to the grading system. Now if we have transformed and benchmarked, right, as a best practice, then is this
not wrong to be seen as this, and the minister is authorized to determine. So this is now an arbitrary decision that he can take. Because it says minister is authorized to determine non-standards and indicators and to measure compliance. Now when you've already accepted that you're going to be against, measured against international standards, then the minister is authorized to determine non-standards too. That's like a guarantee on that. Who is responsible? Is that national department has decided that this is going to be based on international perspective, or it's going to be ongoing process left to the whim and fancy of the minister with due respect to decide when and where and norm or standard of application would come to work. I'm not saying it's so, just seeking guarantee, because it's a bit confusing. Thank you.
Yeah, I think quite not disagreeing with you on that matter. Let us also, if we feel that it is lacking, then perhaps insert those benchmarks or those criteria. We feel that the minister, also that would allow the minister not to to make determinations on his or her wings, whatever, on their impact. You remember that the law now is before us. But we are legitimately asking that question. Also, let us try and also provide for solutions. Thanks. Over to you, Mr. Makubela, and then we up to when we get indications that you are having lunch at about 1 o'clock, then we shall break, and then thereafter responses will continue. Please. Thanks.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I'm certainly some of my colleagues will pick up on most of some of the issues that I may not respond to them. They would come up on some of these issues, Chairperson. Let me start by really reassuring the committee, and you will recall, let me take you back a few years ago, certainly when I first came into the department in 2010. We've always made it our business to keep this portfolio committee informed and updated about particularly the subject matter, this amendment. And we benefited a great deal from the contribution of members of the committee. Most of the issues that are here have been shaped by your contribution, how we needed to structure the new bill, what kind of issues we needed to address. So it has been a very lengthy process, and I'm saying we've made it a point that regularly we would take this committee into confidence, and we benefited greatly from your contribution. I thought maybe that's quite crucial to mention. That is said, that Chairperson, most of the issues that are raised, take for instance the question of the grading council and the tourism protect. No, tourism protect is not an independent statutory body. It's a unit within our legal services that we're going to have that. Now we are trying to address what has become apparent internationally. I think all of us have done this in one instance. And I think definitely maybe more than one occasion that you try to phone a particular service and you find a voice recording that tells you you are number 50 on the queue. You are unlikely to wait for number 50 on the queue. Most of us, we've hung up the phone before we raise what we wanted to deal with. I think we've definitely been confronted with that in one way or another. So we are thinking that the tourism protector will ensure that some of the complaints that people are raising, they are not falling to the crack before, because if they were to phone the consumer protector, which operates the DTI, they'll probably run into the similar system that they are in the queue, because that office deals with a plethora of issues. Now our issues would get lost, and we'll keep on thinking that we're developing a product that is up to standard, that is appreciated by the consumers. Little would we know that people are trying to raise this in the number 50 on the queue, and they hang up before the things are raised. So for us, it would ensure that these things are not left. They are dealt with, and they are resolved, because the credibility of the product that we try to sell abroad is what we depend on. We are creating this unit within the department. It's not an independent. They are registered. They are public servants. They will operate in the office of our chief state law advisor, and they will be able to take their tasks to ensure that the things that are raised, they are taken out to appropriate authorities. They may then schedule meeting maybe with the people in the consumer protected when raising them issues that have been raised with us. Even to make a follow-up, how far they've gone in terms of attending this issue. So we're setting up a body that will do it. That's why our chief legal advisor was saying it's basically unprecedented. We are starting to say we're the only ones who are dealing with this. We cherish the industry, and there are certain things that we must be very innovative to try to encourage and really protect the credibility of our product. So that's what this president is going to do. And we realized actually that some of the complaints that people were sending to us, they would tell us we've raised this thing with so many people. I mean, I had an instance of tourists, German tourists, were driving between, I think, Umtata and somewhere, and in the process, they ran into the protest, and roads were closed, and it has been going on for quite some time, and the tourists rode back, and they tried to raise the matter with the police, but eventually they wrote to us, you know, they've raised this issue, nothing happened, they thought they should have been advised. They don't drive on this route during this day, protest, there are every alternative route. But we, that information reached miles and suddenly, after so many months, these elements are gone, probably where they are, it told so many people to say this is what's going on, and it was a very positive matter, actually. It was saying one thing positive about this country is people are allowed to demonstrate their views openly and so on. But they did not, they know they would have avoided it. So we're trying to address those issues. And we're trying to set up an institutional capacity to deal with this kind of issues and to ensure that when they come, we'll go back to the tourists and say, we appreciate what we've raised, this has been dealt with. If a complaint is to poor service that is being given to the tourists, then at least they get a feedback, they go back and become a good ambassador of the countries where they are. And this is the institutional capacity that we're trying to deal with. And that's why, let me assure you, it's not an independent statutory body that would operate in the, it's within the department, is an employee of the department. In the same way that the minister is appointed the minister of tourists, a guy in different provinces, somebody in the department, and we sign up these people to their responsibility. It is a similar arrangement. So I was actually provided the explanation with as far as that is concerned. Now regarding the case, the grading council is an existing entity within SAT. We're not taking the grading council out of SAT. This bill is an amendment of the existing bill. There's an existing bill, we're amending it, we're strengthening issues that I think we're lacking, and really benefiting from the wise counsel of members of Parliament that have made a contribution in terms of strengthening the bill, some of the issues reflected in the bill, as a result as I indicated of your contribution to try to strengthen that issue. Now the grading council, if you look at, they have any board that advises the grading council, the board is chaired by a member of the board in the grading council. But they put in expertise from the industry on different issues. To sit in a board that reports a member of the board chairs there, of the South African Tourism Board chairs there, but it's to allow the grading council to get the benefit of the industry. It becomes a better arrangement between the public and the private sector, what is the expectation out there. Uman Galala, she's not here. I'm certainly sure what she was describing here is not a greatest industry. And I hope members of Parliament, when you go around, stay in graded institutions. Because that's the only incentive that we have. To tell people who are not graded that we're not going to patronize them. As the state cabinet, you recall, informed you some time ago, cabinet made a decision some time ago, that all government departments should stay in graded institutions. It's a similar arrangement that was taken with respect to that. That if you provide business to anyone, that person must produce a tax certificate. It's to ensure that in the process, we don't deny ourselves of the fiscus, that these are taxpayers. If you're not a taxpayer, it's a similar, but it has been institutionalized. We've had a discussion with the Treasurer to see how we can manage this one with respect to graded institutions, because government will still provide the biggest support around this industry. How do we use that? It comes back to the issue of transformation. How do we do that? To try to manage transformation, because transformation is very painful, because like any change, it's going to take time for people, but do we have incentives to provide? Yes, this is one incentive, but I think there's also an approach with help in terms of helping people to allow their institutions to be rated, as opposed to a very hard. We are now, we reported to our members in time last year that we then take over the Tourism Incentive Fund. One of the things that I raised with the CEO of Production Tourism, where we had a discussion around, should we take some of the funds to try to help the small B&Bs to grade themselves? But we're not going to give them the money. We can develop a scheme that says for the first year we give you this amount, you put this amount in, later on you put this amount, and eventually you run it on your own. It's on an annual basis. You run it on your own, but to assist them get into the system. We are looking at different incentives, including amongst others. The question of insurance, those who are traded, if you go to the South African tourism website, you get it. If you go to the South African embassy in a particular area, because they are ready to find it. So those are the incentives that we're trying to say to people, if you do this, these are the benefits. It's a very lengthy consultative process with this all the stakeholders who've raised, for instance, the issue within our diplomatic mission, within the cluster that there's something that we need to do. Now, we develop institutional capacity in the department. We created a branch that's responsible for that. And Army and the team, they're taking some of the things that we need to utilize the existing infrastructure that we have to better position ourselves. So we're not creating monsters within the same institutions that keep on querying and raising certain issues. They'll operate within the same framework. We are accountable to all of us. You'll play that oversight now and then and be able to check if the things have been done appropriately. Mandarin, we've done a lengthy process of consultation with the private sector. The advocate was saying, the consultation process that is required by law is that we have to open up a consultation for individuals who make their own individual presentation. You'll recall at one stage when we had a discussion at this honorable committee, we requested that every constituency member, just individuals, to try to raise issues that they are concerned about. They have done that. But they have done it through their representation too, because the difference between them participating as individuals and being represented. At that leg, which is the representation of both the labor and the business sector, they have raised their issues, they have made a contribution into this amendment. So we've really catered for that. We've gathered it and invited people to make comments and to send us comments. We've looked at those comments and we've vetted most of those comments in our contribution. Now, this is a total different leg. Now, this is your boss's chairperson. You're going to be running with it because now it's within the department. You're going to be running with it. People are still allowed to make contributions as individuals. My recommendation is that speak your constituencies. If there are critical issues that they think are missing here, let them use this process again because the door is not yet closed for any issues so that these things are affected at the end of the day that we may have missed in the process. We've had the Honorable Zuma, we've had a discussion around the public protector. What kind of dentures do we give to the public protector? Very strong teeth, or we just give what I grew up calling the false teeth. When it's convenient, we'll take them out and so on. Now we really came to a conclusion that to use the stick, it's not going to work. We must allow the private sector to come up with that regulation. And if you look at the NTSS, there are a lot of self-regulatory mechanisms that are there. What we need to do as a department is strengthen our own capacity to ensure that we monitor what they say they are going to do. Because the private sector is the very first one to point fingers at us in government and say, you public servant are this, you are this, you are this. But there are certain commitments they make that they don't implement. So we want to use that. So this is a softer approach that we want to use. But of course it will have limited cohesion, like we won't patronize you if you are not doing certain things. For instance, if we get a complaint from a graded institution that keeps on really things of tourists are stolen and they're doing that, we'd have to look at how do we keep on giving you this star rating when you have those challenges. There are certain things that you need to deal with. Now they know when they are not graded, government is not going to patronize them. So we'll be able to address some of the concerns that are coming. But that needs a very strong institutional capability, not only the national level, the provincial level, to they need to set up this mechanism to deal with the things that are affecting the credibility of our project. Chairperson, I think other colleagues would add on some of the things that I may really have missed. But I'm still thinking, Mama Jo, how do I interview the lead from to that? It has been a process that I found. When I arrived there, the consultation, there were different meetings that were called, the working groups that were sitting there, private sector unions invited to sit in the steering committees, it went on. I mean, at the time I came in 2010, the process was fairly advanced, but it really went through different stages. And I'm indebted to all these different stages we provided. It just was with an update about what's happening. But I understand if you want something, you thought you'd like to try to dig it and find it. But I'm trying to really check where do I dig this. I will check with the team if we still have some of those records, we may have to go through big files to look for the companies, individuals who make comments and so on. Thank you very much. My colleague can add something or wants to say something, Chairperson.
Okay. I don't know whether we have light already, but before lunch, let me just clarify this thing of consultation. If we look on page 27. There is 6.1 systemic stakeholder consultation process with affected interest groups ranging from informal discussions to formal procedures and so forth. NEC is different. Let us also look at that. And then 6.2, the panel of 32 experts from across all stakeholder groups and so forth. Whether that is sufficient or not, well, this is another matter. But when we deal with the issue of consultation, let us take that one into account as well. And this is page 27 of the bill as it stands. And then, Jerry, are you having all on that? Or
they are just finishing that, Jay. The department, I think, can respond in one or two questions, and then they will be finished outside.
Okay. Our rate will be determined by the state of readiness outside. I'm sorry for this. It is still 1 o'clock, but we somehow... Okay, thanks. Over to you, Mr. Tarak.
Thank you,
Mr.
Honorable Chair and Honorable Member. I will speak to the issues pertaining to the tourist guide. I happen to be the National Tourist Guide Registrar, so most of these questions are questions that I should be able to provide clear answers to. There were questions that would be policy related, others would probably be related to practice. I will start with a question that talks to how we deal with prior learning, so to say. The current system does provide for prior learning recognition. And this would even recognize the person that doesn't necessarily have any form of qualification, so to say. There are two specific levels. There is a level 2 qualification, which basically requires that a person must have at the very minimum standard 8. In those instances, they would even go through a process of doing oral examinations and so on and so forth. There is a level 4 qualification which normally gets taken by people with metric and so on, and that then also requires a mandatory fluency in English as an international language, but also fluency in the local language. And there are those that do not have either standard 8, standard 5, or any classroom experience, but they have got a certain level of command of the content. They are then taken through this oral aspect that I'm talking about. The purpose of this oral assessment is that you are able to allow them to be well conversant with the principles of guiding. I will give some examples. There have been instances where you find a group of people knowing the area, and they decide that together they're going to work in this area as guides. Now, when they do that, they found themselves not knowing what the code of conduct will be, which would outlaw, for instance, things such as drinking and guiding, extortion, some of all these illegal activities and so on. They ended up making an arrangement of saying, if this person comes, and I was first on the queue, I'm going to be the first one to take the person. And the person comes and I don't have command of the language the person speaks, but I insist, because I was in the queue and I was first, this person is going to listen to me. And if he doesn't want to do that, he's not going to be guided, he must move. So these are the basic issues that if we don't have this net of registration that we're talking about, and the basic understanding of what a guide can or cannot do, would then have inconsistencies, and it could even damage the brand of the country. But if we do that, we are aware that we need to go out to these communities and make sure that they are, we provide a personal lens so that they understand exactly what are the issues, how they access these skills, how do they find themselves actually becoming tourist guides and so on and so forth. So that's how we are dealing with this particular specific issue. And that's why we are saying currently there is adequate provisions in terms of the national qualification framework. There is also adequate provisions in terms of the practices in a file, as far as content. And on the other side, we are also actually going to these places to make sure that if this is a hotspot and there's a lot of potential for illegal activities, we go there, make sure that people are aware, how can they come into the system, what needs to be done, and so on and so forth. So that's how we are dealing with that particular specific aspect. The second issue, which and it was just an issue of clarity which was raised by Honorable Madam, was the issue with regards to budget structure. Essentially what the budget structure is, it's meant to be able to allow provinces, each individual province, to have a common way of appropriating money into the tourism function. So that if we are saying that money has gone into tourism planning, money has gone into tourism growth and development, or money has gone into marketing or transformation of basics, we can see across the country whether we are adequately funded in different areas and so on and so forth. So it's only methodology system. If I issue that you were highlighting that these are some of the things that are already done that would complement the implementation of the bill as it comes. That's all.
Okay, if I, let us now a break. But for people, while we are on break, for purposes of this bill, I think we got to have a certain consensus around what we mean by tourism, and as we move on. But let us break.
Oh, you don't have it?
No, because what he did, because he didn't give me it.
Oh, you just wrote it today?
Yeah,
oh, okay.
And then I said, fine, ask him to. Yeah, so that's what I have. Unless I can ask him why he is in
the okay, office, then you will email it to me again.
Fine, otherwise,
okay. But you can mail me this one, the one that presented on
yeah, that. No, when you are finished, you can take it.
Yeah. Yeah. Siri, I want to ask you the one time.
We are not going to talk, to say anything about the definition of tourism. What we are going to do is to wait for some meetings that we shall be having and see whether it is not a concern to different stakeholders and then engage this still need. To engage. We do not want to have firm views at this stage. We cannot afford to have firm views because we are having we are going to have hearings, and perhaps that may arise in our hearings one way or the other. And then at that stage, we shall engage you if it arises. If it does not arise, then we shall, the question shall be, given the fact that you have targets, how then do we measure targets? And then take it forward in that way. Remember, we are not looking at this year or in 2 years' time already. we are looking at 2030 as a nation now. So we may have debates on different issues. It may be heated debates, but in that heat, we've got to realize that with one eye we look at that debate, but with the other we look at 2030. Will that be okay? Okay, over to you, Mr. Zim.
Thank you, Honorable Chairman. I think there's a lot of questions and brains around the training council and fossil system. To a very large extent, some of the questions have been dealt with. I do have just a few to pick up on. First one is on the issue of voluntary or mandatory
grading.
I think this is a challenge for us as a grading council because of the coherence of power in the province, which means there's a mixed bag of some community going the route of voluntary and others trying to go the route of mandatory grading. Now, it's a problem, but because we need to have a system on our side that we can universally enforce across the board. But of course, this is an issue that is in the field at the moment. Not dwell too much on it. The grading system or process, a question which has been raised in terms of how we arrive at grading establishments. I think, in a nutshell, we already have a pool of establishments that will apply for grading. Some will fail the standard and some will make it. But there's also an element of human nature around this where people try and beat the system. We give notice to go and create establishments, and in preparation for that people either buy new furniture or do a few fancy things, we create and we go away and things may change. The cycle is 12 months that we have to go back to review the establishment. And that's pretty much the international standard. And others, in fact, even do it over 18 to 24 months. So ours is a shorter cycle. Behind this is the most element that to be graded at a particular level, you need to have met certain standards. And those standards are actually international standards. It is important that we understand that the competition that South Africa as a destination faces is against other countries like Australia, New Zealand, Thailand, America. So tourists are looking for similar experience. In broad terms, when we talk of world standards, benchmarking. Those are the kind of things that we are talking about, so that when people say we are going to South Africa, there will be a very fulfilling tourist experience. They are actually talking about the same kind of experience that they would otherwise have enjoyed elsewhere for the same cost. So if we do not operate on that basis, then we have a challenge, because people will choose to go elsewhere. And it is also about systems. When you talk of systems, talk to technology that helps to drive the processes that we are talking about, automation that eliminates human intervention, and making sure that you can use your resources a bit better. Those are the kind of things that we are talking about. The success of a grading system, in our case, lies on the benefit and incentives which the DG has touched on. I won't go too much into this, where government has a role to play, but it is important that in a voluntary regime, you have incentive processes and you can demonstrate benefits related to taking the effort to be graded. Now, grading, as I referred back to the cycle, is not a permanent thing. You may have been graded a four-star service this year. The challenge about it is that you, on an annual basis, you have to reinvest in the property to stay at that level. In the current economic condition, the cycle is shortening in terms of either the owner running out of cash or the establishment themselves actually wearing down from the previous level. So it is not a permanent thing, which is the reason why we have the faculty and coming back to review the state of the various establishments that we have created. It's also important to understand the other part, which is about representation in the various provinces, how we cover the various provinces. We have assessors spread across the country. Every province has got assessors. These assessors are not permanent employees of the African tourism, but they have been exposed to certain standards, they have been well trained. The reason for doing it this way is so that they can be proper representation of the Banking Council when it comes to assessing various establishments. They follow a certain pattern in grading various establishments which eliminate the subjective component of human error when it comes to grading various establishments. So the every province is in fact represented by a number of assessors whose main focus is in fact to cover the province where they are resident. Our job is to make sure that they are well trained, they are well identified so that they can stay in the system, that they are well equipped in terms of the processes that we have given them. There was also a question raised in terms of the number of graded establishments that we got. Is it a one-time study report? Definitely not. We currently have 9 categories of establishments that we grade and services that we grade. We are moving into the 10th one, which is the game lodges. The game lodges have got a certain type of requirements they have. But just to give you an example, very quickly, we grade from WhatsApp, and in each one of the categories that I will quickly shoot out now, we will grade from the star rating 1 to the 5-star rating in each one of the current 9 categories. Hotel, we've got different categories from grading level 1. We've got the B&B, we've got the camping and caravan, we've got the guest house, the self-catering, the backpackers, the lodge, and we also have a very interesting category which is generally seen as conferences. It's called major meeting, incentives, and entertainment.
Conference.
Yeah. And it's generally seen as conferences, but the language used in the industry is MESE. So what we're saying is we're actually modern. Overlaid on this is the universal access, which also gives uniqueness and a higher category of grading the various establishments. So it cannot, therefore, the honorable members, be a one size fitting all when we have these various categories. The last point I want to make is for us to succeed in grading all the categories in the complexity required to do that, with the credibility required for ourselves and governments that we represent in this process, we need to have skills, we need to have a level of independence. That this is the reason why the grading council has got a board that the minister has oversight of. That it is a board consisting of experts in a variety of the categories that are mentioned here. So you will find that across the board, which we have representation, and especially the universal access, most of you honorable members will know that we have always had one or two members who will remind us constantly about this particular request. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Zimar. Perhaps, let us, before perhaps we go toward our conclusion, come back to the tourism field and look at chapter by chapter. There we can do chapter 1, which is interpretation and objects, and together with chapter 2. And then see whether we are at 1. Mr. Pascal, wait.
Thank you, Chair.
find in some of the other chapters. For argument's sake, if you look at clause 2b, it says provide for effective domestic and international marketing of South Africa as tourism destination. So that you will find in the chapter that talks to SAT as a sort of mandate. Quality tourism products that talk services, tourism products and services that talks to the chapter talking about the grading. So the objectives of the app will be linked some of the chapters in the book. So I think that's one of the kind of things. It defines the conflict of laws and binding forces of the act. This act defines that all organs of state, in the national and local sphere of government, and in the provincial sphere of government, subject to section 146 of the constitution, 146, that if there is a dispute, how we deal with that as a dispute. Then, chapter 2, is the National Tourism Sector Strategy, as indicated by the Minister and the Director General, is that the department, when tourism became a standalone ministry, the first objective was passion was to develop a national tourism sector strategy. So chapter 2 then defines exactly what is seen from the NTA. So we are now giving some legal enabling framework in the legislation for the department, for the portfolio committee, for government to manage NTSS. The NTSS was a strategy negotiated or managed by a group of experts represented from private sector and public sector. And the NTSS has been approved by government. So basically, this chapter now enhanced the implementation of that and give us a legal mandate to deal with the issues. This is also the issue that talks about the national information of tourism, information to tourism businesses, the one that is either referred to as voluntary or mandatory. The clause in here says it's voluntary, but the clause in here has character that says negative can be added. And a negative might be that if they declare and become a part of the information system, that they can appear on the website of SAT as a graded establishment or whatever case might be. So it's how we deal with that issue. Chair, I don't know whether you want to have questions in relation to that, or then I can, because I think the two that has been discussed a little bit is the tourism board in chapter 3. Would you like to allow questions on that specific chapter 3? That's of clarity, because I think the intention of the legislation is enabling. And a lot of action has been taken or is in implementation stage, but now the act, or the draft will come in place now for us to sort of legalize what we've been doing, taking up the tourism sector.
I don't know whether there are any questions on chapter 1 and 2. Where is this thing under the list of national tourism sector strategy forming the council? Is it in chapter 4? Okay.
Chapter 3 is basically in the Act of 1993. That Act that basically established inter-tourism. So this chapter is almost a duplicate of that chapter of the establishment of SAT. It indicates the function of the board, the power of the board. Now, what one needs to know is the board are an accounting authority. The Director General an accounting officer. But in accordance with the CFA, he's also the designated accounting officer. So I think that the board power is an accounting policy reporting to the minister, and this is how we divide here. Delegation and confinement, while the designated accounting policy being the DG is accountable in a delegation to Parliament around the spending, the management, the funding cycle. So this chapter then creates SAT. It indicates the continuation of South African tourism. It defines the powers, what is their function, and the functions we need to look at. And I think the main one is implementing a market strategy. They're responsible for domestic and international tourism. to guide that process. And the board is overseeing it. The board being appointed by the minister of the extended to the cabinet. And related to the question of the chair and what the DJ responded to of making sure that the board representing the industry, the tourism, all those sectors, so that they can then support and guide the management of the SAP, the CEO and the executive. It defines the composition of the board and defines the consultation process. You need to call for people, go through a process, and then ultimately. So that is the governance process in place. It defines which persons who would like to become board member are disqualified. In the location of office, how that is filled, so it defines the governance process of SAP as an entity, which is also a requirement if you do have the PSMA, so the PSMA guides principles, but this legislation then gives the details. It indicates remuneration of members of the board. It defines how many board meetings there should be, the contact of meetings, how resolutions have been taken, the funding of the board, and this is where it comes that Parliament approves the funding, and again, the staff and APP and a performance plan. So all of these issues are linked in here. It allows committees of the board to be granted to do with specific. It indicates the employment contract, a performance agreement from the chief executive, because the chief executive is there reporting to the board, who are the accounting authority. Resignations and dismissal of the CEO, and then the issue of the
Chairman, I thought maybe to highlight the difference on the old act and the new act in terms of the appointment of the CEO. The old act was they must be appointed for 3 years, and we thought 3 years actually is very unreasonable. We moved that to 5 years in the new act. So then all we changed it in the appointment of the CEO.
Yeah. And then for regard to the
surprises
of the life for director general, so we use the mechanism of head of the bar of course is going to be a part of the contract for a term of 2 years.
Then employment and remuneration policy, and that provision that you find in almost all the acts, that if there is a remuneration policy, so employment and remuneration policy needs to be verified by the board. And then it needs to be signed off by the minister and submitted to the Minister of Finance. So there is a concurrent issue of the Minister of Finance to deal with that issue. I think that is the provider of the chapter.
Okay. And then where do we cater for Tomsa ladies?
Tomsa ladies is not in here. Tomsa ladies is a voluntary process. That was an agreement as part of, I need to be helped now, that process, but it's a voluntary process. And the issue was that we discussed that, whether that can be legalized. If it's legalized, then you move into the taxation issue. And that becomes then the treasury and how you sort of tax it, because then you can see as a tax. So that is not in here. This is an agreement signed between business and the public sector statement from the Minister Trevor, Mr. Manuel was part of that process, and that continues. But actually, SIT had an agreement with the DBCSA, who is collecting the Thompson levy. That becomes part of the revenue of the SIT, and it provided that fund is only being used for marketing purposes. So the department or government supply or make sure that funding as far as operations is concerned of SAP are stemming from the success, while the marketing funding are purely, the terms of revenue are purely by agreement, becomes part of revenue of SAP.
We've very deliberated on this matter, and I'm actually crossing my fingers and my toes that it won't come up in the discussion, because I know my good friend Oprah is looking at getting some money to the
right, if we start to make a lot of noise about it, they will turn into a text that is not straight to the discuss. We don't get it into the magazine. And now this is a voluntary process. It then gets very complicated. So there's been a very good understanding. But if we were to legislate it, anything that comes into the discuss, we want, and there are a lot of priorities that will be competing. Tourism will be right in the back. So our view is that we should keep the status quo as is until it's raised and debated somewhere. I'm wondering if Popeye is looking for money now. This is one thing that you would rush for. So if Chair, you can agree with me, we keep it within the committee. You know how
it works. This housemate. So now the Kriya National Parks are not, they collect their own Kamsa ladies as well. They sell sandboard, sandbars.
I don't know sandbars, Chair. I know in this one, it's a voluntary process. For instance, that's why you find a lot of CEOs of hotels, those volunteers collect it on our behalf. And they carry it on their books at the end of the day. It comes back. It's a voluntary process. It's a very rigorous process. There's no way of turning again. It's straightforward. They collect it on our behalf and they give it to us. It's not a lot of money, but it makes substantial difference in market. One is, I think we are raising between 100 million and so on that we are getting. And my fear is that there's a danger of this money. The more a lot of people share, I thought you were not going to talk about that. The honorable members wouldn't know about it. The more people talk about it, so the threat that the treasurer will take, because the FCA regulations are straightforward. Anything that is collected by any entity goes back to the treasurer, we go and monitor it. And that's where the danger is.
Okay.
No, it's the agreement of the Minister of Finance. So there's been an arrangement, but it's not an arrangement that is legislated in this respect. But there's been an agreement that the treasurer knows about. It's fully passed by the Auditor General, everybody knows about it. So the problem is that it's over. It's a big problem.
That part has got all the South African parts. They've got a, they call that scientific thing. So we call it the tourism game. They've got, if you go to see, they've got a time degree that something separate and goes for research purposes. So,
respect and conservation.
Conservation.
Okay. Come, Robert, you want to ask?
Yeah.
On this chapter.
On chapter 3.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you, Chapter 3. I would like to find out why you need clause 9 in chapter 3. And the reason I'm asking that question is because I think ultimately the creation of this bill, of this act, refused the former act. So my question is, are you establishing the board in terms of this act in front of us today, or are you still establishing the board in terms of the previous act, the one that you are receiving?
No, the existing act is still operational. The day the president attends to the new act, it becomes effective, it repeals the other one. So this new act will become active. As is now, this act is a draft. So it's not yet.
Can I ask my point that I've got I'm asking the point because ultimately this is going to be the act.
Yeah.
Are we still going to have that clause 9, this final act? And if we do, why do we need it? Why is it not possible for us to establish a court according to this act and not refer to the previous act? I just need to clarify.
I have no general legal rationale to explain that, sorry.
Thank you. As this is saying, when the new act comes into effect, it will have repealed all of what is in the current act unless we make provision for the Now, this clause indicates we are providing for the continuity of the thing, so that when this X comes into the thing that can be issued, but the point that is in operation now carried over into the new situation.
Okay, let us go to the chief one. Why is it allowed?
Yes. So that is often done in legislation that the main purpose of Montoya said is to have a team in the top nation. If you re-establish the board, then you'll have to have various transitional provisions. And I learned sometimes we don't know what the unintended consequences would be by stopping the old board and having a new board. So this is just a serious transition to say, as it is regularly found in our laws.
Okay, I think that has been adequate answer.
I'll still ask you in future.
Okay, for now let us continue with chapter 4.
I think if you change that word, yes, I think we'll be happy with it. There can't be two for things that will happen. So that was from chapter 3, that too long and easy would like that. Just on the grading, and I just want to give some sort of incompetence or something to add to the new one, say, this is not a bomb. That's one of the things that. The SIC has been established in accordance with Act much in the past 1993. In that act, one of the functions of South African tourism was trading and classification of studies. So that was the mandate of South African tourism, to have a grading and classification system that had the SIT board. With the changes that happened 1994-1996, the grading council was established. And that grading council was basically taken outside the SAP and operating as a CEO, under a CEO. When the government decided in 2009 to create a department of tourism or tourism ministry, the first impression was for us sort of do a governance exercise to see how we are managing. The first thing we picked up was these two entities that were operating outside the legal mandate, being the grading and the establishment. So there was never a grading council being defined in legislation. The thing was the BEE council that was created. The BEE council was in place and back into the spot because it had a function that needs to be done by the department. And that was governed by, in accordance with the government today, in accordance with the GDR legislation. So that was brought back into the establishment. The grading council was then taken back into the SAP because the mandate of grading and classification force would be South Africa's tourism mandate. So what we are now doing with this act, we are basically formalizing, legalizing the grading. And this is, I think, the main objective of this gathering. Now, you'll see the functionality, the reaction of the council, the term of office. In the difference here, we talk about a chief quality officer. When Toulon was talking about the Grand Council, he said, that only established as a unit within each other. So what the Act now does is sort of create the enabling environment around governance. It also creates a thing, and the question that Honourable Member was referring to, is that there are three options of how to deal with this. The one is you can go to the department. The one is it can be worked for, and I think that's the intention to go to the board. But if you want to be a canal agent, then you want to provide this thing for giving money. Then you need to follow due process to create the entity. You need to make sure that your government systems are in place with your finance, procurement, all those things. If it goes to the department is in compliance with the people. So therefore, the Grand Council, if you look at the Grand Council, it's exactly the same as what the board is. But the difference here is that the minister can assign this function. So you can assign it to the board, being the accounting authority. You can assign it to the director general, being the accounting officer. but then the process will fall. So it just sets up the system for us to form our life. And I think that the most important one is that under clause 29, it says the Tourism Ranking Council is hereby established. Because it's a name, it's on the plaque, but that name was never legislated. And this is what we are doing now. I think this is the understanding of the chapter, where it could have been one chapter or the other one. Because things are moving so fast, the process of making sure that grading is important, we've been moving in here. I think that is the main objective of it.
Mr. Zima, is there nothing to add?
No, no.
On grading card, on grading system.
No, Chair, I think we are comfortable with the way things stand at the moment.
Okay.
We believe we are making progress and that the business plan will continue to enable us to fulfill that money.
Okay.
Mr. Zima?
Next year, board. From what I heard you say, that we are now going to be legally establishing the Tourism Grading Council, right? Does this mean that its operation hitherto was prejudicial to some people because they is it open to challenge and suit to say that you have a legal mandate and you grade some and degrade it? So my business has been affected as a consequence
grading
near my
neighbor at full time.
Is everyone
then
looking up legal challenge?
I'm not sure. No, it's not. It's the same process as in a department. We didn't decide to get a department to create a separate branch. Take the whole branch. But in the legislation, it indicates that we need to have a department. Once the president has made the decision, then it is effective to them. In terms of this, any business unit that you may create, even within SAT today, tomorrow you can decide, let's say, the moon tourism is a big thing for us. We can decide to create a unit that deals with moon tourism. But later on, when we do the amendment of the bill, we may want to legislate it so that it becomes a legal framework. It does not mean that it's illegal for it to operate. It operates within a certain framework. It complies with the regulation. The only thing that we are doing now, we are legislating to put in the Act to give effect to that. And that's what we did. It does. So there's no challenge. There's no problem if the authority exists. That's not questionable, because anything that we decide to establish, any unit that we establish, it operates under those frameworks. In the funding of it, it comes from the funds that are appropriated to the department that given to SAC. There's a legal framework
way.
Thank you.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I'm not going into details yet, unless I was to say that there's an accounting system. But well, why do you say the minister may develop? Does this mean you verify which ones who he may not develop it? Or can we do without the grading system? Because this is a name. Then you are giving the minister the latitude to develop it or not to develop it.
Why are you not
saying
that?
This is what you're
saying. In the Act number 39, what Jeff was talking about in Chapter 4, Section 29, says the Tourism Council is hereby.
No, I'm just looking at the...
What number you're
looking at? 28.
28?
Yeah, the very first line there, on clause 28. The minister may develop an enhanced grading of system or policy. You see, my point is, it seems to me we are giving the minister the latitude to develop it or not to develop it.
Now, let me read the whole paragraph so we understand it in context. It says, the minister may develop a national grading system for tourism with a view to maintain or
under the authority of 12 services. But he's talking about the system of grace.
No,
limits.
No.
Yeah, he's talking about,
about the power that you are giving to the minister. Or shall we say the responsibilities, rather than power, the responsibilities you are giving to the minister. I think he may. By understanding them, that you could say he may.
Mother tongue intervention was demonstrated. let us deal with it as we continue. I think there is an understanding from the side of the department, but we shall look at it when we look at the legislation and debate it further. Let us now allow our mother tongue to intervene a bit. So what do you say?
Might have some lively debate as far as this is concerned when we go into the only part of these regulations that has to be in accordance with the Act of 1996. So basically a continuation of those issues. Here and there, there was a recommendation made by NAREC, when we were at there from both labor and from industry around the tourist side. I think the one I got highlighted was the issue of us not legislating the vehicle capacity, because that has been legislated in accordance with the transport legislation. That deals with that one. And then chapter 7 is that normal one that deals with offenses penalty, the allegation and assignment, the powers that will be vested in the minister, and the honourable member was talking about the main, so here being the main feature that the minister may take in his discretion as far as that is concerned. And then Schedule 1 deals with the transitional arrangement from the Fed Act into the new legislation. So I think that concludes by the chapter by chapter, so just I will give some insight of the most ground.
Any other question or clarification? What is your reference to this plan?
The
resolution. Start number 20, not number 20. Now we are coming to the conclusion of this meeting. And you seem to want to raise your hand.
We just confirm that clause 52 is therefore repealing the previous act completely.
It is completely repealed, yeah. That's what they told us during the presentation. Okay, I think in conclusion, I think as the minister has put it, this bill provides order, it provides rules into the development of sustainable and development of tourism. And then the 90, repealed 1993, and then it was, and then it repealed also the 1996 framework, which was the white paper, and then and that closing the gap that had been there. And then it takes into account the fact that tourism is one of the priorities of the new growth path, and then the objectives are listed, the minister listed five, and then the establishment of the Convention Bureau, the Reading Council, which is part of the legislation, which is in line with the PFMA, and it provides for variance with the PFMA, and then it provides knowledge and information management and assures quality and establishes norms and standards as well as code of good practice. And they encourage self-regulation, and they want stakeholder participation, it is inclusive. And then the Director General talked about the legal framework and being inclusive, that is, and then aligning the three spheres of government in line with the Constitution, and promoting voluntary and mandatory registration of products, and then and the grading system as well, and talked about the importance of the meeting of the 26th and 27th, in which we have been invited as a committee, but the 27th is the day of the budget by the Minister of Finance, which is a three-line week day, so we are not going to get permission to attend on the 27th. We are trying to attend on the 26th, just to clarify the question of the 26th and the 27th. And then the state law advisor made his input, and then it is not much in variance with the input of the department, but we shall help in managing the process towards agreement. If you remember last week at the workshop, there was one of the laws where the state the law advisors of the then President Mandela differed with the law advisors of the then Deputy President Mbeki. They differed also, they were differing among themselves. Then the parliamentary advisors had a different view, and the Constitutional Court had another view, and it was split. Now, so if you add up all those views, it's about seven views. So, but we have agreed as a country, whether you have whatever knowledge, that the Constitutional Court is the final arbiter. Whether you think they are right or not, they are qualified or not, the final arbiter is the Constitutional Court. So if it is a red card, it's just a red card. So this is how our Constitution and constitutional arrangement work. And we are going to try our best to make sure that we comply with the Constitution. But if we do not, I do not know how to explain then to the public about this parliament that does not comply with the Constitution. You see, it creates a problem, but amongst the law advisors, also they disagree. So there's nothing about being right or wrong, but it's about, at the end of the day, taking the rules of the referee. And that is what we agreed as a country, and that is what we have to live with. And the same applies here. We want to try our best, but if our best is not in line with the Constitutional Court, at the end of the day, that sitting Constitutional Court, hopefully that will be split as well, then we'll fix the outcome of that court. So, that being the case, let us just try and do our best all the time, and then if we fail, we shall have known that we had given it our best. But lastly, I think it was during the break, holiday, the Christmas break, that we had the good news that the department was number one in tourism in the world globally. It achieved that spot. I think we've got to acknowledge that and thank this team. They're such a good team. Keep it up. But that does not mean that we are good. To stop our responsibility to oversee. So we shall do oversight as much as we can do it, and do your work as much as you are doing it, and you are doing it. We know you are one of the best. Thank you very much. We shall continue and engaging. Doesn't mean that we are going to agree on everything, but we shall continue engaging the team. And that does not mean that we do not acknowledge your performance, which is good. Please keep it up, and I thank you.
Thank you very much.
My name is